Integrity Houston, be advised that we're getting a little bit of ratty calm. We've got structure in the way, and it's dropped out a couple of times momentarily or briefly. So if you don't get us at once, try again.
Copy that, Houston.
Integrity Houston for Reed.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I understand you temp stowed that snack bag that you prepared earlier today. You are go to double bag that and stow that with the rest of the snack stuff in A1. We're not going to use that, but we want it there because we're going to analyze all of that after you get back.
Maybe knowing that a few hours ago would help me not finish drinking that snack.
Or that. He could do it that way. Okay, and also...
If the team wants, I did get out two snacks earlier, and one of them I did not put any water in, and I re-stowed it. I can pull that one out and fill it, and then re-stow it just for analysis.
Not required. It's good in the config it is. And then also, we have OE2 privatized for your conference, and you guys are welcome to meet Resolute Flight over there when you're ready.
Heading over there now.
Houston Integrity for wrap-up items.
Go ahead, Christina.
Hey, Mark. I have AGA readings when you're ready. Okay, when we turned on the AGA this time, we did have two alarms. One said for HCN, it was like a read error. I don't remember the exact verbiage. That was transient. It went away after just a couple seconds and then read off scale low. Then we had the expected high oxygen alarm. Other values, CO2, 3.1, oxygen, 26.6, temperature, 75, pressure, 10.45.
Okay, we copied those. You have more stuff for us?
And for the docking camera, we will be completing that activity shortly.
Okay, awesome.
Currently connected to CMM network.
Good.
And Mark, we were just chatting that we probably owe you a report on that Geo shot list. And we have been referring to the shot list, and basically, we really just have the cameras out almost at all times. We got the bird today. We got all the DFTO, and pretty much every day, we've been catching day-in-the-life items, whether that's mealtime or time at the windows observing, and any dynamic operations, and basically kind of the big moments of the day. So we do think we're capturing all those. Let us know if you need more granularity on that, but we are checking the list. We're making sure we get what they'd like and more.
Fantastic. Thank you.
That's all we had. Anything from y'all?
Yeah, just the one thing. We are about to start that wastewater dump momentarily. And I know it's pre-sweep time, but it will take any observations if you have them.
We're watching right now, and it's a light blizzard with kind of familiar larger particles and kind of pulsing, chugging. Not a ton of flow right now compared to maybe the higher flow primary dumps or the secondary dumps. But yeah, we're seeing something out there. We're seeing some kind of snowstorm.
Okay, copy. Thank you for the observation.
And Mark, it pretty much came to a complete stop there, and then there's been a couple little spurts, almost a complete stop right now while I'm talking to you.
Copy, Jeremy. We're going to keep it config to dump and see how far we can get this down. Thank you for the insights. And if you do need to use the toilet, just give us a call.
Copy and understand. Thanks.
Seeing flurries out the window now, and slightly increasing just started.
Okay, that's good news. And Jeremy, we got one go back. If you could tell us where the images are from the day, we have good calm and like that stuff right now.
Okay, you can look on PCD2 for the science photos that we took for the opportunistic science. And that's the only ones we've done so far. We're probably going to add a few more later.
Awesome. We'll go look there. Thank you. And if this is it, and I hope it is, good night to you guys. Sleep well.
Good night to you, too. We had a great day.
Copy.
Integrity Houston, no action for you. We're toggling right at that limit. We're going to inhibit that waste dump required message while we're doing this. Sorry, suppress that message.
Okay, makes sense, Joe. Integrity on one for 10.2 questions.
Go ahead.
First on the dump, very slow flurries, and then the docking camera is powered. And then third, when we went down to 10.2, we just, obviously with the pressure change, a lot of our packaging up here expanded pretty heavily. And one that we noticed is the LIO bags, and we don't know if the LIO inside those bags is damaged by the pressure delta or not. Let us know if you would like to open up the Ziplocs there and take a look. I'm not sure if we have to go into the hermetic seal on that bag or not.
Okay, copy the question. We're talking about it. Hey, read the LIO question. Nobody seems too concerned about that right now, but it is going to take a little while to talk to Murr and get a better answer than that. Would you like that called up tonight if we get that tonight, or would you rather just wait and hear it in the morning?
And Mark, we can wait. Thank you.
Okay, copy that.
In Houston Integrity, there's now some photos on PCD3 in for downlink PAO day 5.
Copy that. Thank you.
Connected to CMN Network.
Houston Integrity, PAO images.
Go ahead, Christina.
Hey Mark, we have a few more images on PCD2 for PAO downlink.
Okay, copy that. In the meantime, we did get some answers back on the LIO question. The first thing, and none of this needs to be worked tonight, but just what the people are thinking is, first, we would want to know if you can tell if the seals on the canisters themselves, the Kapton tape seals, are damaged or impacted. And then also, we were looking for clarification on whether these were contingency or post-landing LIO.
Hey, Mark. The ones that we can see that are very posy are post-landing. Our assumption was that potentially others that might be packaged the same are that way. But the Kapton tape of the canister itself, obviously we'd have to open the bubble wrap to see. So maybe that's something we could do tomorrow. But understand, no issue with opening the bubble wrap, which has Kapton tape over the Ziploc seal.
Right.
And one more clarification. The bag is opaque, so we aren't able to see through it to determine anything about what's inside.
Okay. We didn't understand that piece, but let's look at all of that tomorrow. In the meantime, if these things are so poofy that they're in your way and you just want to get them stowed, you have a go to vent them and make them their regular size.
Okay, I understand. So far, not too in the way, but we'll definitely address tomorrow as able around our awesome day of science. Thank you for the answers.
You bet. Thank you. Houston for Christina.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Go ahead.
We have some general toilet info for you guys. We are about to terminate the wastewater dump because we have some docking camera objectives happening. We do have enough oilage for one more use. So any time between this termination here shortly and 9:20, which is when we'll resume dumping again, one more use can happen. And then our objective is to be done with this dumping overnight, and by the time post-sleep starts, it will be ready for another use or more.
Okay, thank you so much for that insight, Mark. We've been watching the light snowstorm outside. We see the quantity coming down a little bit. And just to make sure I have the time correct, it was 0920, and that's an MET today, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And another question, can we use the secondary pump or the secondary waistline during these docking cam ops?
Checking. How about this? If we can avoid it before that time, that's great. If you need to use it, you need to use it.
Okay.
And you'll go to dump
next
now if you need to as well.
That we're asking is, can we use the toilet if it is for fecal and not urine?
Checking. No constraints on fecal use.
Okay, I think we've got everything we need. It's amazing how many questions you can ask about using the toilet. We appreciate all of your care, and you can expect a pretty late single use of toilet near 9:20. And we'll minimize the secondary waste up.
Copy all. Thank you.
Houston, thank you for putting the Maria Smooth directly in window 3. It just took our breath away. And for the first time this mission, the 400 mil lens, it doesn't fit completely with inside the viewfinder.
That's a pretty awesome milestone. And if you feel any different in the last hour, that's because we entered the sphere of influence.
That we noticed we entered the lunar sphere of influence about an hour ago, and sure enough, we are now falling to the moon rather than rising away from Earth. It is an amazing milestone. Also, earlier we had the Earth out as a crescent out the side hatch and the moon out window 3, and definitely, by far, the moon is bigger than the Earth.
That's such a special perspective. Thank you for sharing that.
Connected to CMN Network.
Houston Integrity for one more photo.
Go ahead.
Hey, Mark, on PCD1, an image for downlink, just sitting on its own, not in any folder, is 6684, which we just took with the 35mm lens, and it's the perfect human eye perspective of the moon out the window with the interior of Orion visible. It's a pretty cool picture if you want to share that with the team or with the AO.
We'll get that down right away. Thank you.
And Integrity on 1 for email.
Thank you, Reed.
Hey, Mark, as we have passed into the lunar sphere of gravitational influence, I think that's just a huge thanks to the team down there as we head around the moon tomorrow. It is really great to be reunited with some family, and I appreciate all the effort that you all have put into it. And email is great. Thank you so much.
Glad to hear the confirmation of that. You're welcome, sir. Have a great evening.
You're connected to CMN Network.
We will, and we are assuming that we can start doing secondary dumps at 9:30 MET. If that changes, please let us know, because we do plan to use that capability.
9:30 is a good time. No changes to that.
Okay, in that case, we're all studying our lunar targeting packages here. You can see the glow in everybody's eyes from the PCDs, and we're going to head off to slumber here soon. Thanks.
Awesome. Sleep well.
Currently connected to CMN Network. Connected to CMN Network.
Whiskey Bravo 8, Romeo Whiskey India standing by. Romeo Whiskey India standing by.
You're connected to CMN Network.
This is Apollo astronaut Jim Lovell. Welcome to my old neighborhood. When Frank Borman and Bill Anders and I orbited the moon on Apollo 8, we got humanity's first up-close look at the moon and got a view of the home planet that inspired and united people around the world. I'm proud to pass that torch on to you as you swing around the moon and lay the groundwork for missions to Mars for the benefit of all. It's a historic day, and I know how busy you'll be. But don't forget to enjoy the view. So, Reed, Victor, and Christina, and Jeremy, and all the great teams supporting you, good luck and Godspeed to all of us here on the good Earth.
KYU.
Connected to CMN Network.
You just heard was a wake-up call for the astronauts that are on their way to go around the moon. This is WHCMN.
Well, it's not legal to broadcast on ham bands.
To rebroadcast to the NASA audio, it's perfectly legal.
Oh, that means then I can take you to beforehand and put it over the air all the time.
Good morning, Reed. For the toilet, we did see your sleep crew note from overnight about the toilet, and we did power cycle it while you were sleeping. Do you go to activate the toilet, and if it starts up, let it run for 60 seconds. You have no fault lights. You're go to use toilet, and please report if you have any off-nominal signatures. And additionally, we were able to get the wastewater tank down to 66%, so it can be used, and we've re-enabled the wastewater dump required caution for your awareness should the tank level reach 80%.
Okay, we'll start it up, let it run for 60, and then see, and then just confirm secondary dump lines are all warmed up.
Affirm, secondary lines are all warmed up and you're good to dump.
All right, awesome, thank you. And then switching gears, that was an awesome message from Jim Lovell, and very cool to hear him. Welcome us to the neighborhood, it's going to be a great day, thank you.
Concur, Reed. Yeah, I know it gave me chills. Definitely one of my heroes. We do have one other item for your awareness about an S-band string swap we'd like to do soon. Following up on that S-band string 2 item from yesterday, we want to do a string swap to string 2 to confirm it's a good string. We're going to do that from the ground. We'll command the swap to string 2 and also uplink bailout etcdem commands to swap back to string 1 in case string 2 is loss of comm.
action there? Is it all ground commanding? If so, go ahead and knock it out, whatever could be for you.
No correction, and we'll go ahead and knock that out from the ground. I'll probably give you a call back up with a voice check when we're done.
Outstanding, thanks. So before we lose you there, I'm surprised that at least on the DUs, our flight plan does not say anything about stowing our saliva science kit this morning. Confirm we want to leave that out in the cabin today?
Checking.
Again, what you're hearing is the audio between NASA and the human space flight, which kind of circled the moon for circle the moon. So it's brought to you by WATMN repeater systems.
Integrity Houston on one for saliva sample stowage. Okay, Reed, the first set of saliva samples can be stowed per the stowage note. That's part of Victor's timelined activity at 1825. The second set of samples will be temp stowed out in the cabin.
Copy, all thanks.
Integrity Houston for post-S-band string swap voice check.
Loud and clear on S-band 2.
Yep, string 2 is looking good, so we're going to remove those bailout commands.
Loud and clear on 1, loud and clear on 1, looking good.
Yep, concur on Orion to Earth 1.
Okay, that's awesome. Everything looks good on board. I got so far as to take a single window shutter off, and the moon looks amazing. Aris Darkness is the brightest thing that I see on the entire surface, and if I can pull myself away, I'm going to get to work in the post-sleep.
Sounds great, Reed. Thanks for that description. And we also wanted to let you know that you are go to perform the dock cam remove activity. No rush.
Yeah, thanks.
Houston Integrity for image.
Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Amy. Great to hear your voice. Great to be working with you all today. We wanted to share what we're seeing out the window. There's one picture of the moon as it looks right now on PCD3 and images for downlink.
Excellent, Christina. We will downlink that now. We look forward to seeing it.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Student Integrity for daily summary answer.
Houston's here.
Yes, ma'am. For the question about the QUID, caution warning ID 1421 is showing suppressed, and we did not do that on board.
Copy. Thanks for the data.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
Houston Integrity, are you ready for HHPC?
Connected to CMN Network.
Integrity, we're talking. Integrity, we are just finishing off a couple of downlinks. It'll be a couple minutes, and we'll be ready to be on board with you soon.
Integrity Houston, we are go for the HHP stream when you're ready. Integrity, we are on board with you.
Good morning, Houston, from inside 215,049 miles away from Earth and 12,712 miles from the moon. Let's actually savor the calm delay that we have. We're ready for the morning deep evening.
Beautiful. We are savoring it down here. Good morning, Integrity, and good morning, Moon. Our room is buzzing with moon joy today, and I imagine yours is too. I have a few items related to flyby and then a few items for things further afield. Here we go. I will roll through them all. First off, we are looking forward to having science follow up with your observations as required on Orion to Earth throughout the flyby. Today, you will pass the Apollo 13 record distance at the end of the pre-lunar flyby conference. We are planning to call you with milestone words at that point, at the end of the conference, not later in the allocated PAO time on Optimus. That will be your opportunity to share your thoughts to celebrate the occasion. As of now, we have one more liquid toilet use left until we hit our nominal limits, and then we will talk about what to do about it more soon. On that note, we're always looking for feedback. So Christina, if you had a chance to review that CCU use message that we mentioned in the mission summary, we'll take it. And finally, we want you to know that after yesterday, the entry folks are talking about allotting additional time for entry prep, including cabin config. It's not related to today's operations, obviously, but it is going on, so you can plan for more on that tomorrow as we focus on the flyby today. That's all I have for you for now. What do you have for me?
Thank you, Jenny. That's good to hear, because we were thinking the same thing. It's great to know that our minds are working the same. We are ready to go. We are looking forward to working with and for the science team, and we are just excited to be so close to finally accomplishing what we've been training for so many years. And also, we want to say thank you for that really special message from Jim Lovell. We have a pretty neat emblem up here. We have a patch that was flown on the Apollo 8 mission. And that patch is here on the Artemis II mission as well. And that was sent to us by the Lovell family, by Jim Lovell's son. And so that was a really special way to start the day. And he said to welcome us to the neighborhood, and it's great to be in this neighborhood. And we look forward to sharing this neighborhood with you all.
We can't wait. We see the patch, and it's looking beautiful. Thank you.
When this showed up in our office from his family, we were completely honored. And the Earthrise, which this crew is responsible for taking that photo, has been instrumental both to our crew as our ethos and values, but also just personally to myself. I had the photo up in my room as a kid, and it was part of what inspired me to keep working hard to achieve things I dreamed about. Also, we took a deep dive into the cockpit recordings around the time that picture was taken, and it turns out there was a lot of hubbub, kind of I wouldn't say fighting over cameras, but definitely everyone wanted to capture the shot, so we're happy to carry on that legacy because we often are all glued to windows and looking for cameras too.
And I'll just close. I know it looks like a piece of paper in the camera there, but that is actually the original Apollo 8 patch printed on silk that they had done before they launched, and they flew that with them on their journey around the moon, and then the family handed it over to us, as Ike said, and it's just a real honor to have that on board with us. Let's go have a great day.
We are all on board with what you told us, and to have a great day. Thank you, Integrity.
Thank you, and have a great day, Houston and Huntsville, for Avatar, all lights lit except for 15 and 16.
That is a good read on the Avatar LED. Thank you.
Hey, 81, clean up thing from yesterday. I did rediscover the unused chocolate snack from the DFDO. Remind me where to store that for ground analysis.
Hello, for a found snack, you can stow that in locker A1. Thank you, Reed.
A1, go in there. Houston Integrity for milestone words, question.
We'll take your question.
Hey, Jenny, are you all okay if we use the AIU and Orion Earth 1 in conjunction with the HHP camera, or would you like a full-on D5 setup for that?
Checking. Integrity, you can use the OEs and your HHP camera for the milestone words at the Apollo 13 record distance.
Okay, thank you.
Houston Integrity for AGA.
Ready to copy.
Carbon dioxide 2.3. Oxygen, which has the alarm, 26.3. 73.1 degrees. 10.3 PSI. And one follow-on question. We understand milestone words will be directly following the conference. Will that take the place of the PAO event, or will the PAO event still take place per the timeline?
Good question, Christina. The milestone words that we exchange at the record distance at the end of the conference will take the place of the PAO timelined activity. So that'll be our moment to talk about this occasion, and after that there will be no more expected PAO words, and you can get straight into your flyby. Copy all AGA.
Okay, thank you. And final clarification, even though it's taking the place of it, it will all just be on OE1 with HHP camera, no additional video. Is that right?
Affirm.
Okay, thank you. Yep, some of us had already heard that. Sorry about the second question. We appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
No problem.
CQ, Kilo Echo 8, Juliet Victor Echo.
Houston Integrity, I think there was going to be some families heading into the viewing room today. If they end up showing up, could you just give us a heads up when they're there so we can just wait until them on the camera?
Absolutely.
And if they don't come, you could just lie to us and tell us that they're there. That'd be great, thank you.
We'll keep that in mind, too. I'm sure they'll be here.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Houston Integrity, the long lens is configured for lunar flyby.
Houston copies.
Houston Integrity, we are ready for the conference on your call.
Houston is ready for the conference, passing you over to Science.
Good morning, crew. This is Science. We couldn't be more excited for a full day of lunar and planetary observations today, the first one in over 54 years. How do you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear. And Kelsey, you just got to know you're pulling us away from the moon right now, so let's go.
Message received. I will keep it tight here. I did just want to start with a thank you on behalf of the Lunar Science Team and the entire lunar and planetary science community, of which you are absolutely a part, for what you've already done in this mission and what you're going to do today to inspire the next generation of scientists. I have to say Moonjoy is the new term that's already become our team's new motto, so thanks for that. In this conference, we'll cover hardware and config reminders, and then I'll just briefly, as you said, cover today's science plan. I'm assuming you already have your LTPs up. Confirm that, and I'll jump quickly into the cabin config. Big reminders.
Okay, we have the LTP up just to give you a sit rep on board. You've got Reed and Christina on one PCD, and Ike has his own, and Jeremy has his own.
Copy that. That was going to be one of my questions for you, and I'll ask a question back. Is that the config that you and Christina plan to carry throughout the day for PCD use?
Negative, Kelsey. Our plan for PCD use is we have run the power cables to Windows 2 and 3, and we are going to leave one PCD. The yellow PCD will be in Window 2, and the green PCD will be in Window 3, and we will do that the whole day. And then the red PCD will be a rover.
Understood. Super helpful. Recommend when you guys switch in and out of PCDs to add your initials to your OneNote annotations, just so we can keep track of who's who. And then given that you have three PCDs instead of four for the data transfer at the end of the day, recommend making a new subdirectory entitled For Science for your own photos or with your initials so that we can keep track of which pictures came from which flashcards.
So, Kelsey, I just want to just do the, here's what we're doing. We have community cards in all cameras on board, and then when each astronaut approaches their camera, the intent is they will put their card into that camera for photos and then put the community card back in at the end of the session. But just know it is harder to manage cards than we thought, and we don't want to miss science, so it might end up a bit more disorganized.
Understood. Thanks for that essay. Just read the flashcard numbers down when you get a chance, and we'll follow your lead on the best thing to do operationally during the flyby. With that, I'll move on to Windows. So the window characterization DFTO you guys did a few days ago confirmed that Window 2 is ideal for imaging, so no change to config of photographer in Window 2, observer in Window 3, and science sit reps in Window 1. Coming up on a handover.
Hang on, Kelsey. The way we have it configured, tell us if this is going to be wrong. Window 2 is the long lens with a shroud. Window has the T-shirt shroud for the Z9 and solar. And then Window 3 will be for visual observations, and Window 4 is for floater.
And thanks, Integrity, for that. Reed, we had a handover during that time, so I'm going to have to ask you to give that read back on window orientation for the crew again.
Okay, we are happy to change it, but the way we have it configured right now is Window 1 has a T-shirt shroud for the Z9 for solar. Window 2 has the shroud for the long lens for both lunar and solar. Window 3 is for visual observations. Window 4 is for floater. And then the docking hatch window has had a great view, so we've done a lot of mapping through that as well.
All right, copy all, Reed. A note just on the Window 1 T-shirt shroud that you can remove that for the lunar observation block if you want to, if you want that extra view for another floater. But defer to you guys on that. You are go to use the full 400mm zoom on the long lens, but where possible, try to keep the end of the lens flush with the window to prevent imaging through the multiple window panes at an angle. And if you have to take an image at an angle, recommend you limit the max focal length to 200mm or simply acquire the images at multiple focal lengths. Last imaging update as a result of the DSTO is that if you can take the images out of the left side of window 2 where possible, that is the best half the window. Understand that might not be possible with the shroud. Any other imaging questions from you?
Connected to CMN Network.
Okay, copy that.
Okay, last couple reminders. Don't forget the ability to take the WAV files to tag imagery that you are wanting to follow up on using the FN3 button on your camera. And then a couple quick notes on your LTP. We have refined your precise flyby timing since generating the LTP. Optimus has the correct timing for the LOS and AOS, but the LTP identifiers for LOS and AOS are roughly 2 minutes later than they will be in reality. Final LTP timing update is that the green line on your LTP should start automatically 45 minutes before the flyby. If it doesn't appear, let me know and I'll have troubleshooting steps for you. Last updates are on the eclipse, so only for that last hour today. Of course, remember if the sun is in view to use your eclipse glasses. And reminder that we will have a few activities for you prior to the eclipse to reconfigure all three cameras for corona and deep sky observations. These activities, some of which will occur during the forward link LOS, so we wanted to flag it for you now. Any questions before I cover the last two reminders?
No, we have no questions on that.
Last couple eclipse reminders. The sunset period and the first roughly 23 minutes of the eclipse will fall during that forward link LOS, but we'll still have a return link, and we're still looking forward to your science sit reps and observations during that time. And I do have a reminder for you on your preferred starting config for the eclipse in terms of role responsibility. Let me know if you want me to read that up or if you guys have that in your minds already. And if no other questions on config, I'll give you a few science-focused reminders.
Give us a quick high level, but we see it in Optimus, and I think we got a square away. But give us your quick Kelsey high level.
Okay. A couple changes from the first LTP you studied is that Glushko is the only feature that the same pair will view twice. That's Reed and Jeremy. That's why that's the only target you see that is marked as one of two and two of two. So Ohm and Oriental are in there twice, but they're by different pairs, which is why you don't see them marked accordingly. A note from feedback on your observations so far over the last couple days, a reminder that if you note structure and texture as well as color and albedo, please note any correlation between the two, and also a reminder that negative observations are still valuable science. So a lack of color or a lack of structure associated with color is also valuable. A reminder also that your observations so far indicate it will likely take some time for your eyes to adjust. We especially heard that around your Terminator observations and your color observations. So reminder to know that your eye adaptation is going to kind of come in throughout your shift, and let us know when you start to see that nuance. Last reminder is around Earthset and Earthrise. When you're viewing us back here at home, you'll be looking directly at Asia, Africa, and Oceania. So I'm sure people watching from those places here on Earth will want to give you all a wave as you take their picture. Any other questions for me?
And Kelsey, hey, when you're talking window 2 left and right side, can you say towards window 1 or towards window 3, and then we'll know that we are talking the same language?
Absolutely. So I mean that the side of window 2 closest to window 3 is preferred for imaging.
Okay, the side of window 2 closest to window 3 is preferred for recording. Stand by, we'll talk. Kelsey, for the T-shirt shroud, what window does the science team think will have the best view? Is it window 1 or window 4?
The only time we're strongly recommending use of the window
shroud. The eclipse. The window, the T-shirt window shroud for the eclipse viewing. Which window is primary for Z9?
Window 1.
Okay, awesome. So we have got that all set up. And just to be 100% sure, window 1 is the most port window by the food warmer. Window 2 is right in front of seat 1. Window 3 is right in front of seat 2. And window 4 is on the starboard side by the side hatch. Do you agree with all that?
We agree on the ground. Good read back.
Okay, that's awesome. Kelsey, we're going to close with happy words. Just incredible. I wish you were up here to see all the smiling faces, to hear all these terminologies being thrown around, and we are just fired up to get started on this day. Let me pass the mic around if anybody has anything.
Kelsey, it's so great to hear your voice on the loops. I just want to channel everything that you guys are probably feeling right through my eyes and heart. It is awesome to see the side of the moon. You guys made us excited for this day, and we couldn't appreciate it anymore. And we are ready to hopefully deliver on all the awesome training you guys have provided.
How does that, Kelsey? It is blowing my mind what you can see with the naked eye on the moon right now. It's just unbelievable. Kelsey, and to the whole Lunar Science team, all of you, all the work you put into this, we're just grateful, can't wait to get going, and thank you for the tipper, for Carol Crater, and for Integrity. We can see them, and we've imaged them, and can even see with the naked eye. Quite impressive. Thank you so much.
Beautiful words, you guys. Thanks so much, and I got video of the science team right now, and they are all absolutely buzzing. Looking forward to today.
Okay, we're heading into the timeline. Cheers, guys.
Integrity crew, we have Reeb's family in the viewing gallery. You're welcome to say hello.
Well, whether you're being serious or you're kidding around, that is awesome to hear. Thanks, Jenny. And hello to Ellie and Katie. I don't know who else is there, but it's great to know that you're in mission control right now following along. We are having a blast up here, and the view of the moon is absolutely amazing.
I'm seeing a lot of hearts come out of the viewing gallery and even more smiles. Thanks, Reed. Healthy heart, healthy bracelet. Integrity crew, on April 15, 1970, during the Apollo 13 mission, three explorers set the record for the farthest distance humans have ever traveled from our home planet. At that time, over 55 years ago, Lovell, Swigert, and Hayes flew 240,655 statute miles away from Earth. Today, for all humanity, you're pushing beyond that frontier. Integrity, over to you.
Yeah, from the cabin of Integrity here, as we surpass the furthest distance humans have ever traveled from planet Earth, we do so in honoring the extraordinary efforts and feats of our predecessors in human space exploration. We will continue our journey even further into space before Mother Earth succeeds in pulling us back to everything that we hold dear. But we most importantly choose this moment to challenge this generation and in the next to make sure this record is not long lived.
Thank you, Integrity, and congratulations to you and the rest of the Artemis II team.
Thank you, Houston. We have a couple more things. We'd like to take this moment for our science team helped us out with a couple of relatively fresh craters on the moon that have not been previously named, and our crew would like to propose a couple of potential names for those items or those areas. And we spent a bit of time this morning looking out the window, and we're able to see them now both with our naked eye and through the long lens, and so we feel this is a good time to send this down, and a special shout-out to Kelsey for helping us with this. The first one we'd like to suggest is a named crater in honor of our great spacecraft, Integrity. And so if you were to look at Oriental on the far side and then draw a line straight up to Ohm on the far side, relatively in the middle is an unnamed crater, and we would like to suggest it be called Integrity in the future. And the second one, and especially meaningful for this crew, is a number of years ago we started this journey in our close-knit astronaut family, and we lost a loved one. And there's a feature in a really neat place on the moon, and it is on the near side, far side boundary. In fact, it's just on the near side of that boundary. And so at certain times of the moon's transit around Earth, we will be able to see this from Earth. And so we lost a loved one. Her name was Carol, the spouse of Reed, the mother of Katie and Ellie. And if you want to find this one, you look at Glushko, and it's just to the northwest of that, at the same latitude as Ohm, and it's a bright spot on the moon. And we would like to call it Carol, and you spell that C-A-R-R-O-L-L.
Integrity and Carol Crater, loud and clear. Thank you.
All right, Houston, we're getting ourselves all put back together now, and we are going to dim the cabin lights and prepare for our science objectives ahead. Thank you.
Sounds good. We're doing the same down here, and you're maneuvering to your observation attitudes.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Houston, Integrity for camera serial numbers.
Ready to copy.
Hey, Jenny, these are card numbers for the various positions. For the long lens on the D5, we will have individual cards. Victor's 1008, Jeremy 1019, Reed 1012, myself 1015. For the Z9, we will have one card that is dedicated for today, serial number 1007. For the cabin camera D5, we will have one dedicated card for today, serial number 1022.
All right, Christina, we copy all. Thank you.
We just realized that we have Earth out window 1 and Moon out window 2. Earth out window 4 and Moon out window 3. And it gives you the best idea of scale we have had yet. The Moon is about 3 to 4 times the size of the Earth, and it is almost full, and the Earth is just a small crescent out there. It's magnificent. I got a picture of it with the wide lens. Such majestic view out here.
Amaze, amaze, amaze. Thank you, Reed.
Houston, Integrity for attitude.
Go ahead.
final attitude now for the lunar flyby. Would it be possible to pitch the vehicle down 5 degrees? That would allow us to get the D5 long lens flush and have the least amount of window distortion.
We're checking.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
Houston, integrity for timeline.
Go ahead.
Hey, Jenny, just to make absolutely sure that we start observations when expected, we are showing an optimist that observation time starts in about 15 minutes, and an LTP that our first target, discussion one, starts in about 29 minutes. Can you confirm you'd like us to start discussion one in 29 minutes at 1900 GMT?
Christina, we are tracking that discussion one should start at 1845. That's 15 minutes from now.
Okay, copy all. It may be a granularity issue with LTP, but understand that we start that observation in 15 minutes, and I bet when we get there, the green line in LTP will match the start of the white band for discussion one. I think it's just a matter of the labeling and the granularity. Thanks for confirming.
Copy, and we'll look into that a little bit more on our side as well. Christina, can you verify for us that your green line is moving on the timeline page of your LTP?
Affirm. Jenny, I do think we're good. Looking closer, I see the labels are just not aligned with starter end times of the white visible bands. It fully makes sense now, so I think we are all set. We'll look forward to starting some observations in about 13 minutes.
Happy. Thanks, Christina.
And Houston Integrity, if we roll left for 5 degrees, that would get the moon closer to the left side of window 2.
Copy, Victor. We'd like to know if it's pitch and roll, or one or the other.
Jenny, we actually thought you already put the pitch in. Had the pitch been put in already?
No, we need a little while longer to talk about it.
So, Jenny, I guess what's happening is just as our orbit's changing, where it is in the window is changing, so maybe these fancy little adjustments aren't worth it. It's going to continue to move in the window. Or is the spacecraft going to keep the moon at the same point of the window if we adjust the attitude? I assume the previous.
Right now, we are pointing the center of the window to the center of the moon with 2 degrees of dead band.
Houston Integrity, we have two folks at the window deep in discussion talking about all of the awesome features that they're seeing. We just had a huge moment realizing that Hertzsprung is about the same size as our incredible Oriental. We're really excited about this target that's kind of new to us. We're orienting on things like how we talk about albedo, seeing some of the prevalent things that we're used to from all of our training, and just overall taking in this view. We also are noticing that the moon is still getting noticeably bigger as we go, even when you're watching it continuously. It's great to see these two guys get warmed up.
We love the report, Christina, thanks. And you nailed it on why we added Hertzsprung. As you'll see in the prompts, we're looking for comparisons to the comparatively much older Hertzsprung compared to the younger Oriental. Great words.
Houston Integrity, one report from the crew at the windows. We can actually see the moon and Earth at the same time right now. It's interesting because the Earth looks way brighter, so the Earth itself seems to have a much higher albedo than the moon. We think this is independent of our eyes focusing because, of course, the Earth is much smaller than the moon in our view. So you could think that your eyes focus for the darker sky, and that means that it only has apparent brightness more than the moon. But since we're seeing both in the same view, we do think that this can be inferred as the Earth as a whole has a higher albedo.
Great observation, Christina, and reminder that as you're starting to look for those subtle color and albedo variations on the moon, the relatively bright albedo Earth might make those a little bit difficult, but as your eyes continue to adjust, we expect you to start to see more nuance on the moon. Thanks.
Great call. Thanks for the reminder.
Science from Integrity. We have a SIDREP. The targets that are being discussed right now, it's the far side, near side comparison, and hearing some great discussion of browns and greens in the Aristarchus Plateau and how those disappear as you go toward the North Pole, and then over to the far side, you lose the color. You've got Jeremy in window 2, Reed in window 1, having a great discussion. Christina's under window, I'm sorry, Reed is in window 3. Christina's under window 1, documenting the discussion. And we've got the lights completely off in the cabin. There are some LEDs that we cannot put out that do provide some light scatter. But we have all of the internal lights off. And are letting our eyes adjust as best we can. The window 4 view, you only get about a third of the moon. Tycho is going to go over the horizon soon, and you can see Aristarchus, and then you start to lose the view as you go to the west in Oceanus and Procellarum. So far, the team is on the plan. And the long lens is being put to good use, and recordings are being made, and internal documentation of the configuration and the observations is ongoing. Science, do you have any questions for us at this time?
Integrity Science, Victor, very glad that you provided the first formal science sit-rep, as these were indeed your idea. One follow-up question, any relationship between those browns and greens you described? Do you see them blending into one another, and do you see any topography associated with either color?
Connected to CMN Network.
I don't want to bother the window team. I just heard that. I overheard that. And so I'm sorry I don't have that detail yet. I will eavesdrop and see if I can pick that up. I will try to answer that at some point. I also heard a comparison of the albedo in Aristarchus, that crater, the very high albedo spot. You can see it on the near side. There is a feature called, I believe, Burgess Alpha, that is equally or maybe higher albedo. I apologize for the gaps. I'm trying to listen and talk at the same time, but I will try to get some more information to correlate those colors from Aristarchus for you.
Understood, Victor, and good call to not bug the window team. Really like the brightness comparisons to Burgess A. Really helpful for the science team. Keep them coming. Thanks.
I also heard a discussion about the albedo of Grimaldi being a 10 and how many of us, when we were a little further away, saw that as the darkest albedo, and that Mare off to the west, sorry, to the east was still dark, but maybe a 7-8. We still think that, but you are seeing color variation, albedo variation inside of Grimaldi as well, and that even on the west side, there's still a very dark part of it. But it is still the darkest. It is just not as uniform as it looked when we were farther away. We're starting to differentiate the striations of albedo inside of Grimaldi.
Copy all, Victor, and you read our mind. Superlatives like darkest, biggest are really, really helpful for us, so keep those coming.
And for the eye listening.
Houston Integrity was able to, excuse me, Science Integrity was able to get a view out of window one, which is a beautiful view. I can see the entire moon that they're looking at. We left the t-shirt up there, so I was kind of peeking through the opening in the makeshift shroud there. And once I was able to get two eyes on it, what jumped out at me was Babylon. It's just peeking out of the Terminator. It's clear of the Terminator now, but it just really jumps out because it's still got the low light, the low sun angle. And so where the, you know, Babylon has that impact over the top of another crater, where the two craters intersect on the eastern edge. So on the side closest to Oriental, where the two crater rings intersect, the shadow there is the highest peak in the interior of Babylon, and so you can see that terrain is, there's some real variation in the terrain there, that there's a nice peak where those peaks intersect, where those rings intersect, and we'll get a picture of that.
Love the description, Victor, especially the comparison and relationships you just described about topography. And if it's easier for your observations, do feel free to remove the t-shirt shroud from window one.
Absolutely, we will do. Thank you. And Science Integrity, looking out of window one, reported earlier saying that it was Tycho going over the horizon. That was Copernicus I was referring to. Apologies. It was Copernicus is what is farthest bounding to the east, and that is now like on the horizon or just past it. And Korolev is now a few degrees from going over the horizon. And then, you know, next it'll be Aristarchus. Aristarchus plateau. And so on the west, we are getting a much better view of the Terminator. Looks like we have about 80% illumination of the moon. And Vavilov, and one Vavilov diameter to the west is where the Terminator is right now. And so other features are starting to peek out there. The center of the illuminated part of the moon is to the lower part is Oriental, and just around Oriental, a lot of light structure is starting to show up. A lot of high albedo, similar to the feature I cannot remember, Burgess Alpha, and Aristarchus type high albedo in the ring. So when you look at the interior ring and the external ring, it's almost as if the edges are starting to dry up and turn white. If it was something that was wet and not dry, the edges would be the part to dry first. You just kind of outline all the topography in the interior of that wall is like it was dusted with chalk or started to dry, or maybe dusted with snow. If this was the Earth, I would say there was snow dumped on some of the ridges on the interior of the rings of Oriental. Also, an interesting part of the discussion that I heard between Reed and Jeremy is that from Glishko to Grimaldi, there are two dark features there that look like commas, but in the wrong direction. But there's also a lot of interestingness, just a lot of geometry and squiggles and dots and lines that are starting to stand out as more small features come into view. And there also is a lot of variation in albedo. In some of those, the two dark features, for example, have on the southern edge of the larger one, the one that's further to the south, is a very dark, the one albedo, like the southern and western part of Grimaldi. And the one to the north, closer to Glishko, is also that same dark albedo. And then around them, there are some very high albedo spots.
Integrity Science, love the descriptions. You're definitely looking odd up there. Appreciate seeing the training being implemented. Especially interested in your descriptions of the dark patches. You compared the comma-looking features to the albedo you see in Grimaldi and noticed that you're starting to see those color differences popping out. Any observations you want to make, especially when you get on, you know, the PCD in a little bit, would really help us tease out the differences in those dark mare deposits. Great description, Victor. Keep them coming.
Absolutely will do, and I know you've got descriptions on both of the window observers right now as well. Keep them coming. And Science, Integrity, that crater to the north, that is, it's like a, we've got one in the north that looks like just a textbook crater, and one on the south pole as well. The one on the north, I think, is Pythagoras. And what I wanted to highlight about that is it is either a very distinct central uplift or just a very defined area of high albedo. If a majority of the crater, especially the floor of the crater, is, say, an albedo of 5, this center, and only a tenth of the diameter of Pythagoras is an albedo of 2, maybe 3. But it is very bright, and it stands out. And then between that crater and the actual, what is the horizon from here, there seems to be another crater right on the horizon. And right on the edge of that is another patch of that albedo. It seems to be between the two craters. It's hard to tell from this grazing angle. But there is another spot just further north beyond Pythagoras between the two. I can draw a picture of this one and show you where that very high albedo, again, another 2 albedo surrounded by 5 and most of the area bounding it.
Integrity Science, thanks for that. We agree with the Pythagoras assessment. And as a follow-up to your previous report, the SIR had questions about topography comparisons between the North Pole and the South Pole of the Moon, if you're willing to provide words on that.
Topography comparisons, absolutely. And if you have any idea what, if you draw a line between Pythagoras and the western edge of the outer defined ring of Oriental, it intersects a beautiful textbook crater on the south. I would love to know the name of that. The topography differences, now the South Pole has a little bit of a benefit that it has more of the terminator, and I can see a little more shadowing there, but there is a nice crater right at the South Pole, so that's the main thing defining the topography there. Seems to be quite a bit of elevation change. I can see some very jagged shadows at 90 degree just to the west of that crater at the South Pole. I can see a very distinct change in the shadow directions indicating, I don't know, a very high wall or a very deep canyon just to the west of that. And in the north, it seems to be that from sort of the edge of the mare that's dark, which is maybe 1 Pythagoras diameter south, if you draw a ring about that, you know, maybe the top 7 degrees of the moon, and just draw a ring around that, the near side is an albedo of 5. And looks quite smooth from here. And then along the same edge of the mare, the edge of the mare that kind of Grimaldi's just outside of, Lushko is just outside of, Carroll Crater is just outside of, and you start to see the stark differences between the darker 7, 8s and the 5s and 6s, the 4s and 5s. If you follow that line up to the north, that line is also where the change in topography happens at the North Pole. The line defining the light and dark on the edge of the mare that you can see from Earth, draw that line roughly the midpoint of all that straight to the North Pole. And on the side facing the Earth, you see smoother topography and dotted by Pythagoras and its next-door neighbor crater. And then on the far side, you see a lot more cratering and a lot more topography. And again, the far side has the benefit of a little terminator there, but I am seeing a variation in the topography. It seems to be more jagged and a more challenging place to find a place to land and to even traverse in the south, all around the South Pole. And at the North Pole, it seems to be, it would be more challenging to translate on the far side of the North Pole compared to the near side of the North Pole around Pythagoras.
You're connected to CMN Network.
And Kelsey, another little science hit rep moment, something I just heard from the window team is, the more I look at the moon, the browner and browner it looks. I thought that was an interesting observation. The two observers have been on timeline, no hardware issues. They did start to talk a little bit about another feature that you'll hear more about on the recordings that they call the handprint. That was at the end of their Glushko and before they moved into their current target. They thought that was worth chatting a little bit more about. And they're preparing to switch after this.
Houston copies and concurs.
Hey, Houston and Science, actually Houston and Science, Integrity, another just observation from the human. My eyes have shifted a little bit since I've been up here. I've been wearing my reading glasses to look at the PCD. Well, this is a very taxing event on the eyes, looking out the window and seeing the very bright moon and coming back inside to the dark cabin and trying to work cameras and microphones and logistics and lunch and those kinds of things, and then looking at the PCD, which is dimly lit. It's just been an exercise. It is a difficult thing to manage it. I'm up and down on the glasses and then having to wait as my eyes adjust when I come back in. As soon as I look back into the cabin from looking out the window, I can feel my eyes adjusting, and I just have to work through it as they adjust.
Appreciate that report, Victor, and know that we are prepared to read you up targets from the ground if that would give you the ability to keep your eyes focused on the moon and not having to swap between that and the PCD. Just let us know.
Yeah, we appreciate that, Science, and we will also do that for the window teams, and we'll back each other up that way as well, but we appreciate that. We may take you up on that. Thanks.
And Houston, another observation, whole moon. When you look at the moon, something I've never seen in photographic photography, all these really bright new craters. Some of them are super tiny. Most of them are pretty small. There's a couple that really stand out, obviously. And it really looks like it's like a lampshade with tiny pinprick holes and the light shining through. They are so bright compared to the rest of the moon.
We copy, Christina. Thank you. Looks like you guys might be doing it, but remind you to swap positions at the window and take your SD cards with you. We're loving everything that you're calling down, so keep it up.
I wanted to provide an observation or a little bit of descriptive nature on something that we saw on the first day we had good moon views. This was when we saw more of the near side, and the ground helped me out with identifying Mare Imbrium. Mare Imbrium, when you have the western limb also in view, looks completely different than the normal view we have of the near side. It is the most striking feature of the western limb view that we had. And its entire, the mountain chains that form its eastern side are very prominent, but they actually stand out more than I'm used to seeing, even on the western side. And the whole thing just feels like a big bump. It actually looks like a large healing wound with a high albedo forming the mountain chain around the impact basin. And it's I just don't think I had enough chance to describe how striking it was on that western limb view as we were coming in a couple days ago.
Christina, science, absolutely love that, especially since that's a feature that all of us here on Earth can observe from home. So I'm sure tonight everyone's going to be going out and looking for evidence of that beautiful topography you just said. Thanks for those words.
Houston Integrity, sorry, Science Integrity, a question and a comment. Question is it possible that we're seeing Schrodinger Basin from this vantage point in the Terminator at the South Pole? And the comment is Ohm. The rays coming out of Ohm are less distinct. We are not seeing the bright rays coming out of it, but the sort of 9 o'clock wedge that is formed by the change in albedo from the interior portion that is to the northeast to the surrounding lighter Mare that's 270 degrees to the west. That 90 is very distinct and interior. You got some great descriptions from the two at the window about the colors in there, but in that darker part in that wedge, you've got some really interesting color, even though the rays, the distinct difference in the albedo almost look like rays, but it's not the rays coming out. It's the just change in that albedo.
Integrity Science, that is very intriguing, those color rays coming out of Ohm rather than sort of albedo. And as answer to your question, we do not think you can see Schrodinger. It's in darkness as of now. But thanks for that Ohm description, and it sounds like the pair at the window's got great descriptions that we're definitely going to dive into tonight.
Okay. If you could help me, I would still love to know what it is. There's a very nice crater. Like we have a lot of pictures of it. What would be right in the Terminator at the South Pole or close to the South Pole where it's intersecting the Terminator right now?
Yeah, Victor, we're assuming you're talking about, kind of if you're looking at the Terminator, it's basically like 70% down from the North Pole. Is that where you're looking?
Contact, yes, that is where I'm looking.
Integrity Houston, that is an enabled caution for wastewater dump required. We have hit our limit. As expected, no crew action.
Copy, no crew action.
And Integrity Science, we're trying to figure out what you're looking at there. Is it like right on the Terminator, or is it in the eliminated portion next to the Terminator?
And Science from Integrity, excuse my space orientation adaptation. If you draw a line between Glushko through the center of Oriental, and then another line from Glushko through the southern tangent of Oriental, that line would almost perfectly intersect tangentially the crater that I'm talking about, and it is on the Terminator. So yeah, I think I'm not looking at the South Pole. I was a little twisted.
That line description was really helpful. I have eyes on the sir right now, and they are actively discussing lunar geography. We will be back with you shortly. Integrity Science. We believe that's Zeeman Crater.
Oh, I cleared away from the speaker. Say it again, please.
We believe that that is Zeeman Crater.
Zeeman. Okay, and can you say the first letter? I may be pronouncing that wrong. What's the first letter of that word?
Zulu. It's Zeeman.
Copy. Thank you for that. Yes, we've got a great view of that. And when I went to the window just now, the view has completely changed. Our trajectory is taking us to a new view, and I'm looking more into Babylon. I've got a nice, great view into Babylon. I'm actually away from the window right now, so I'm going to go try to give you some bounding words on the view that we're seeing. But I've got to get back to a window in a minute.
Understood, Victor. You're defining new views of the moon in more ways than one.
Science Integrity, I wish I had some more time to just sit here and describe what I'm seeing, but the Terminator right now is just fantastic. It is the most rugged that I've seen it. From a lighting perspective, there are little islands. There are islands of terrain out there that are completely surrounded by darkness, which indicates some real variation in terrain. Up to the north, there is a very nice double crater. It looks like a snowman sitting there, in the 5-10 degrees below the pole in the Terminator. And then on the southern edge, there's almost like a hole. It looks like a hole. And it's the diameter of Babylon size, just blackness. And then a wall of bright. And then it goes back to the black beyond the Terminator. So there's it looks like there's just a gigantic hole right there. One Babylon diameter east of the Terminator. And as you go south, the Terminator is not a nice smooth arc. It's just jagged. There's almost a 110-degree turn in the shadow as opposed to the nice smooth arc, again, indicating some really interesting variations. And I'm sure we'll get some photos of that. And then one of the craters further to the south of Babylon, maybe halfway down to the South Pole, is not only a very, looks like just a deep hole, and then there's like two island rays pointing off to the west and north that indicate very high ridges and very deep canyons coming up out of that crater. So again, just some really interesting visual illusions going on with the shadows there. Like I said, there look to be islands out beyond the Terminator because some of the things, maybe even a Babylon diameter into the Terminator, are catching sunlight on the peaks up to the north and to the south. It's very, very interesting to see.
Integrity Science, oh my gosh, that was an amazing picture you just painted. I glanced over at the SIR video and I literally saw fist pumps in the air. Those types of observations are things that humans are uniquely able to contribute, and you just really brought us along with you, so thanks for that.
That's awesome, Kelsey. Did you get a SITREP updating you on a slight change in logistics for PCB use?
Christina, this is Houston. We did not, but we will take it now.
We slightly changed the PCB plan for the window observers. The two window observers kept their PCB. So in other words, the one that window 2 went to window 3 and the one that window 3 went to window 2 when they swapped rather than staying at the window. We'll plan on all observers keeping the same PCB for all observations.
Happy, Christina. That makes sense to us and good plan. We are coming up here on a cabin and window team swap. Let me know when you're ready for a quick vehicle status.
Houston, go for the vehicle system update.
Howdy, Reed, we don't have much for you. We just wanted to let you know that toilet right now is no-go for use as we stick with the predetermined limit for now. All crew members, please use CCUs. Otherwise, Orion is looking very good. And you have 15 minutes in this handover time where we expect Victor and Christina to switch to the windows and you and Jeremy to be in the cabin assisting. Let us know if you have any questions.
No questions at all. They're in the swap right now. The first thing I'll tell you, I floated up to the docking hatch window and just... that what I'm going to call the mooring around Oriental just looks so different out the docking hatch right now. It's quite a bit darker. It's the same darkness, if not a little darker, than Grimaldi. But it's cool after just being in the 400 mil for the last half hour, looking up close. I got pictures of everything Ike was just describing on the Terminator. It really is a fascinating Terminator. And Oriental just looks so, it looks so dynamic right now. It's very three-dimensional at the docking hatch compared to what I was just looking at through the 400 mil.
We love it. We are getting a sneak preview from one of our SAW cameras of what you're looking at, and we see some of what you're describing. We cannot wait to see your photos. Thanks.
Yeah, Jenny, I wish you had some longer lenses on the solar array so you could see the whole moon, but man, it is, or the up-close moon, not the whole moon, but it is just fascinating, and it's so cool.
All right, MPO and INCO, take notes. We want a zoom lens on those saws next time. Thanks, Reed.
Affirmative. Hey, Houston, the professional science update giver is now in C2. That is where Victor is, and Christina is nestling into seat one with the long lens, and we're just getting ourselves oriented here. It's a cool view in the cabin. It's actually a cool view to be off the camera now and looking at my crewmates getting up to their observation posts and looking in. It's super fun.
Connected to CMN Network.
Copy, I'll really like it.
And Jenny, for the science team, if they can mark this time, I just covered up window 4 to block out the ambient light from a very bright planet Earth. And it'll be interesting to see if in the data Victor and Christina see any differences from me and Jeremy with that window blocked. It's a lot darker in the cabin now.
Copy, Reed. We're taking note. We'd be curious, too.
Integrity Science for a science sit rep when you're ready.
Houston Integrity, we have no external view of the moon right now for the floating crew members, so my only science sit rep is that we have Victor in window 3 doing observations and Christina in window 2 with the long lens.
Integrity, we copy. Are the shrouds still on windows 1 and 4? And if so, would you consider trying to get a view through one of those windows?
We cannot take the shroud off of 4 because the Earth is too bright and it's impacting Ike's peripheral vision. And then I can get a grazing glimpse out the docking hatch window. I can see Oriental south down to the South Pole. And the primary thing that I see from Oriental right now is the just long trenches that come out. And, you know, when you come out the north side of Oriental, the ejecta kind of boulders across the northern half of the far side. But coming out the southern half of Oriental, I just see those large, here they look like gorges. They're almost like rain when it comes down the Grand Canyon and fingers off into the desert is kind of what it looks like. Also, Burgess Alpha is extremely... extremely bright. It's the brightest thing that I could see, even brighter now than Aristarchus, which is heading off to the Terminator. It's almost impossible now to see Aristarchus, the thing that Jeremy and I look so much at. I can just barely see the crater rays from Ohm, and I would say for albedo right now, I would go back to Kramati is still extremely dark, especially in that southwest corner, and there are parts of Oriental and the outer ring of Oriental that reach that same level of darkness, especially the rings of Oriental reach the same level of darkness as Kramati. And then south of Kramati, Jeremy and I were noting a few other just really dark areas of cratering, Mare there, and those have that same darker albedo, but Burgess Alpha is the brightest, and Kramati is the darkest.
Integrity Science, that was a great description. Thank you, and thanks for the docking window geometry to give us that description. Any comments before you go on the annular ring in Oriental?
The annular ring, which I think everybody kind of describes as like a pair of lips or a kiss on the far side of the moon from here, is very circular in nature. The northern part of it is wider, darker. The southern part is much lighter. It is very neat looking, and it is very far more circular than I remember it looking in our training. The darkness of the northern side of the annular ring is the same darkness from here out this docking hatch window as the center mare in Oriental. Not quite as dark as Kramati, but it is probably only because dust and lunar regolith has kind of impacted over time.
That's exactly what we were looking for. Thanks so much. You have heart hands coming out of the surf.
Say that again, Kelsey.
Just saying that the surf was really excited about that. That annular ring was something we were really eager to hear about. So thanks.
Yep, you bet. And now Victor and Christina are moving on to Oriental. I got them situated over there a little bit late.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Integrity, time for a window team position swap. So Victor and Christina, please switch places if you've not done so, and remember your SD card for the camera.
We're in the swap right now. They're wrapping up their last comments, and they'll switch over and change cards in the long run.
Copy.
Houston Integrity, you ready for a science zero?
We'll take it.
Okay, that crew has swapped positions. They're in their crew choice element. I've been listening to both of them for a little bit, and they're really enjoying, they both decided to pick the Terminator, and they're spending a lot of time looking at the Terminator, just talking about the resolution that they can see, the depth of the craters and the various interesting and unique excavations that they can see. So Victor is on the long lens and Christina is just looking out the window, and I'm sneaking a peek in t-shirt window. It looks like, I don't have the best angle here, but it looks like Aristarchus is on the limb of the moon now. It's amazing how quickly it changes as we speed around the far side of the moon, stuff that's leaving our field of view, and how we have a lot of the dark side of the moon that, you know, missing for us right now, but it would be in view if it was lit at all.
Fair
Jeremy, Science. Thanks for that sit rep. Do have a question. A few times we've heard you and the other crew describe change during the course of your flyby. Would be interested in future descriptions of more verbosity about how it's changing. Thanks for the great sit rep.
Yeah, Kelsey, sounds good. We are definitely keeping an eye on that. My eyes are just not readjusted. The moon is so bright when you come back to the window. I was just in the interior of the cabin. I've come back to T-shirt window, and it's just overwhelming brightness. And my viewing angles have been challenging. So I won't be able to give you great observations from this window. But I will talk about something that I was talking a lot about in my recordings earlier, which was we've been talking about some shades, and so we have the dark and the light gray, and then we talked about naming some colors, a brownish hue and a greenish hue. And I'll tell you, like, right now, Aristarchus Plateau is hard for me to see from this window, but that had greenish hues to me. It was very unique. I didn't see anything like that anywhere else on this side of the moon. And then I see a lot of these what I would call brownish hue areas. There's a number of them. And they, for example, in the northwest corner of the highlands, to me it looks like the brownish hue is caused by ray or ejected material landing on the highlands. And then we obviously see the ray areas as a lighter albedo, but in between the rays where the deposit would be thinnest, that is what it looks like is causing the brown to me. So I saw that in the northwest side of Aristarchus, or sorry, that dark area of the highlands, northwest side of the highlands. I saw it in the highlands to the east of Glushko. And then I see those same brownish hues west of Oriental. And I drew a contact there on one note, but that's a huge region, kind of like a piece of pie with the point of the pie pointing at Oriental and then going up towards the northern side of Hertzsprung. And that is an area that just looks like a different, that brownish albedo.
That was fantastic, Jeremy. We had heard rumors of the green and brown hues, and so you really read my mind on asking about those. Understand they likely didn't have any contact with each other the way that you described them, but please correct me if I misunderstood that. And then last thing, I'll make the same offer we made to Victor earlier. If it would be helpful for us to verbalize any targets so you can stay at the windows and keep your eyes adjusted to the moon, please let us know.
If you got something you want us to look at, Kelsey, you can send it on up.
Definitely not looking to interrupt your flow, Reed and Jeremy, only offering assistance if you guys want to keep your eyes off of the PCDs.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Not really science related, and we definitely learned this at Apollo, but the thing that is just most fascinating, I think, to me and Victor right now is even as rugged as the far side looks, when you look at Oriental and Home, it's rugged, but man, when you look at the Terminator, it is just like impossibly rugged, and it reminds you that the whole far side is that way, and just the Terminator is really bringing out the shadows of the hills and the valleys. And it is just, it's unbelievable. It's like no surface of the Terminator is not marked by meteor impact. And it is very impressive to look at that. And you realize that is true across the whole far side. You just can't see it due to sun illumination right now.
Reed, Houston copies, and we were commenting on the same thing. Even from our view, the Terminator looks absolutely alien because there's just so much texture in there that we're just not used to seeing. So thanks for sharing that with us.
There's also, I don't know the name of it, coming out the south-southwest of Oriental, right on the southern Terminator, is just a massive crater. I don't know the name of it. Maybe you can look on the solar array wing video, and probably it's right. It's the southernmost crater you see on the Terminator right now.
We're looking for you. We're loving that picture. Thanks for showing us. And Reed, as an answer to your last question, we believe that that is Chebyshev crater. And the sir agrees with that.
Okay, that picture I was just showing you is an 8X iPhone out the docking hatch for the high grazing angle. It's just amazing.
We love it. Thank you.
Integrity Science, thanks for those iPhone views. It's helpful to see what you're seeing.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
Integrity Houston, it is time for another swap between the cabin and the window teams. So we have 15 minutes of handover time, and then we will expect Jeremy and Reed at the windows and Christina and Victor at the cabin. I have no new vehicle updates for you, but I do have a photo location for some photos on Ike's PCB, and I want to let you know that Jeremy's family have arrived in the viewing gallery.
Okay, Jenny, we copied most of that. The only thing we're missing is what you meant about the photo location on Victor's PCB. And hello to my family. I think that must be Catherine and Devin that are there. And I'm glad they made it into the viewing room. And we copy a cyber crew swap. The A team's coming out of the windows and the B team's going in.
Okay, copy. All I meant to pass for Victor's PCD is that there are some late load photos that were requested that are now in his favorite photos folder. And you're exactly right. We have Catherine and Devin here. They give you a big wave, and they're super excited and happy to see part of what you're seeing.
Okay, copy, Jenny. We're not sure what we're looking for in the PCD. But we're going to poke around, and we may be calling you back about that one.
All right, that's no problem, and it's unrelated to flyby.
Houston, a little preview of what's to come, but something that's truly awesome up here is we now have the Moon and the Earth in Window 3 simultaneously, and the Moon is a gibbous, and the Earth is a crescent. And I'm guessing in about 45 minutes, we'll have two identical crescents as we change our position in the universe.
That is pretty darn cool. Thank you.
Alpha Delta 8 Mike Papa testing. Anyone on frequency? This is Alpha Delta 8 Mike Papa. Negative contact clear.
Houston Integrity for SITREP. First of all, I'll just talk about the experience that I had during Victor and my observation time. It was an incredible experience. We definitely noted how much more you can see with the zoom lens, even though we have a great visible eye image. There's just a lot of texture that just pops right out at you when you can zoom in, so almost as using it like a telescope, the camera lens. We really enjoyed our discussion time. That was a great innovation on the lunar targeting plan. We were both able to describe a lot more kind of with flow, I would say, when we were talking to each other. And it was also, we sort of were able to bounce ideas off of each other and come to new conclusions. We had, I think, a very successful talking through of some contacts between different color areas, both in the Mare and in the Highlands. And we identified some really unique texture areas as well. At one point, towards the end of the images of my time in Windows 3, I just had an overwhelming sense of being moved by looking at the moon. It lasted just a second or two, and I actually couldn't even make it happen again. But something just drew me in suddenly to the lunar landscape, and it became real. And the truth is, the moon really is its own body in the universe. It's not just a poster in the sky that goes by. It is a real place. And it, when we have that perspective and we compare it to our home of the Earth, it just reminds us how much we have in common. Everything we need, the Earth provides, and that in and of itself is somewhat of a miracle, and one that you can't truly know until you've had the perspective of the other. I'll switch into some logistics stuff. The Paltors boats, their batteries stopped providing the active listening, but we have verified they are still recording, and so we are able to have discussion time and hear outside our recordings by just moving the ear cup off of the ear. Other than that, everything's working well technically, and we've been able to find all our targets, and we're having a really great time.
Thanks, Christina. We copy those logistics for the Paltors, and also thanks for bringing us into the cabin with you with that description. Integrity cabin team for Window Shroud. Hey, Victor, we have a temperature constraint on the windows, and the shroud might be getting us close, so we just want to check on the state of window 4's shroud, whether you believe it's still necessary because maybe things have changed with our viewing, and if so, we would like to request to have the shroud removed.
We believe it is necessary. We pulled it off just to the corner. It is very bright. It definitely would affect our night vision and maybe comfort. But is there a time? Can you tell us when we would have to take it off by?
Unfortunately, since it's been on for a while, we are going to have to request that the shroud is removed, and we can recommend something that could block the light but just create a bit of distance between the window and whatever is covering it. Something like a T-shirt would do the trick and help.
Okay, we're removing the shroud, and we'll make it work. Thanks.
Thank you, Victor. We know it's pretty bright in there now with that window uncovered. We will also offer that airflow on the window would be helpful. So if you want, you can also retrieve the condensation hose, which should be friction fit onto one of the diffusers. And that on the window would also help.
We can easily point our diffuser at the window, so we're going to start with that. And it's pointing at the window now.
Okay, we'll take that, Victor. Thank you. Please keep us updated.
Science, integrity. First, I wanted to start off with connecting with what Christina said, that it was very moving to look out the window. I had the unfortunate sequence to start looking out the window and then moved to the long lens, and it was hard to speak looking through the zoom because I went straight where Christina went, and I was walking around down there on the surface, climbing and off-roading on that amazing terrain. I also want to underscore something that she said. As we continue to explore, when we actually do go down into the surface, I know for safety reasons that we would never send someone alone, but I just want to really emphasize how important the discussion time was. When we started to talk, we not only got better science discussion, we got better human connection, and so doing this as a pair, we just learn and grow together, and that's just super important, so thank you for adding that to this plan. Reed just passed me a note that the Oriental Basin Angular Ring has a similar albedo to the center, but a different color. It has more brownish tones in it, and
Victor, thank you. You got a cheer from science there, and we all just went on that moonwalk with you, so highlighting how important it is to talk about these things. I also want to let you know that we have Deanna Glover with us in the viewing gallery. She's all smiles.
Connected to CMN Network.
Well, you just got a bunch of cheers up here. Hey, babe. I love you from the moon.
We love that we got a hey, babe, too. And we also have one of your lovely daughters here watching you guys work.
Thank you guys for doing that and for supporting them through this. And to all of you, Genesis, Maya, Joya, and Corinne, I love you. And Deanna, I love you. I'm glad you get to be there. Science from Integrity. Let me find out how far we are from the moon right now. But our view is about a third of the moon is in eclipse. That beautiful Terminator is out there calling to me. We're 4,691 miles from the moon. And what looked like in the Terminator about third of the way up from the southernmost part of the Terminator looked like a dinosaur print. One was running to the northwest. Now it's clearly a crater with a bunch of craters around it. And that Terminator, I can only see about half of it. I'm looking through the docking hatch window right now because we have the Z9 in window one. But that Terminator has moved. I guess I've been using Vavilov the whole time, so it's gone two more Vavilov craters to the west. And so a few more features are starting to peek out into the sunlight there with that low sun angle. And so you still have ridges and valleys showing up very clearly, a very jagged Terminator and a few islands of light out there with some high elevation shining in the sunlight in that darkness. And on the eastern side of the moon, Grimaldi appears to be one of the farthest east features, and that is maybe 5 degrees from being right on the limb and going off over the horizon. It is interesting, just looking at Oriental, that my first impression of it is all of the dark areas appear lighter, which I think makes sense because it is now facing, well, it's still relatively the same to the sun, but my angle to it is different. So I'm looking at it from a little more, even further up to the side as we pass it. But all the darker features appear to be just a little bit lighter. From this vantage point, the darker ring structure in the outer and inner ring and the interior, as well as the annular ring portion, everything seems to be just a smidge lighter at this point.
Thanks for that description, Ike. Any additional words you can provide on Oriental would be wonderful, as that is such a high priority target for us. And while I have you, as we get closer to target 15, which is the Terminator target, if you can find Zeeman Crater again that you were looking at earlier, everything to your left of Zeeman would be getting into the South Pole Aiken area to help you orient yourself.
Zeeman is a great waypoint out there. I definitely see it. Yeah, Zeeman is very easy to find, and that is awesome. Thank you for pointing that out. Feel free to do that as often as you think of things. Let's see, looking back at Oriental. Okay, another thing, after looking through the zoom camera, man, you guys are smart. You probably did this on purpose, but after looking with my plain eyes and then going to the 400-millimeter zoom, now looking at it, I see the cliff face. As if you're standing in the center, that inner and outer ring have definitely some real terrain. Now I can see that as terrain. Now that I look at even with my
can tell that there's a lot of elevation and that, like I said, a cliff face on that eastern edge where all the darker deposits are. And it's just the scale now. It, looking at it from far away before, it seemed like flat with color painted on it. But now that I look at it, I can definitely see that there is, you know, different depositional characteristics. And so the darker is some other material, but there's also some shadowing going on because of the cliff face that is a part of that crater wall.
Great description, Victor. Thanks. And really interesting to hear now the distinction between shadow and color. Before I let you go back to other observations, you mentioned that Reed saw a browner hue to the annular ring than the rest of Oriental. Are you seeing that from your vantage point?
The way that I'm looking at Oriental, again, I'm still in the docking hatch window. There's like a thermocouple right here in the center of the window, and it is the orange Kapton tape color, and so it is unfortunately, it's like trying to look at stars, you know, next to a metropolis. I think it's drowning out any color that I could pick up from the moon. I am not able to see that color, but I have not looked at it through one of the forward face from one of the windows 1 through 4. I think when I get away from this Kapton tape strip that I would be able to see the variation that Reed's talking about.
That is great feedback operationally. Thanks, Victor. I'll leave you to it.
Science Integrity with a question from the window team.
Integrity, this is Science here with you.
Yes, they have a question to help inform a theory that they're sort of tossing back and forth. What is older, the Mare seas of the near side or Oriental?
By Integrity, we're going to get you a little geologic history here. Integrity Science, back with you for some lunar volcanism when you're ready.
Go ahead.
You're making our day down here getting to talk about lunar volcanoes. Oriental, as far as Mare go, is younger than almost all of the Mare on the near side. The exception are features like Aristarchus, which, you know, really pop out to you guys and really pop out to us here on Earth. That is younger. But other than that, Oriental is pretty young as far as Mare go.
Kelsey, thanks for that. We love lunar volcanism, too. How about when the actual crater was formed?
Yeah, we're going to get you an age for Oriental, and while we're getting that, Christina, can you, maybe you've heard the window team talk about the sort of contacts around Oriental, but because it's that material is so much younger, if anything pops out to you about physical relationship between that and surrounding terrain, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, definitely. They are discussing a contact relationship that could explain some of the color that they're seeing in certain areas. And so it was really about the ejecta of the creation of the basin and understanding the superposition of its ejecta and Mare on the near side or other features. So thank you. We'll take the insight when you have it.
Thank you, Integrity. And I know Jenny wants to get to you with some topics, so I'll leave you with Oriental is 3.8 billion years old.
Copy that. So that's on the older side. The actual basin was very old.
Correct, as is the case with a lot of Mare. Typically, the big basin formed, and then the, you know, volcanic eruption was able to punch through the crust where it was weakened by that basin formation.
Perfect. Tracking. Thank you.
KFA EOR monitoring.
Better answer.
Integrity, it's about time for a position swap at the window. We will ask Reed and Jeremy to swap positions, and I'll remind you again about your SD cards. And Victor or Christina, I have one window task for the cabin team when you're ready.
We are swapping, and I'm ready.
All right, Tina, we found a way that we can reinstall the shroud on the window. We understand it's pretty darn bright compared to everything that you're looking at. So in order to reinstall it, we will ask that you retrieve the condensation hose and you install it on a friction fit on the cabin air outlet port. That's right by one of your diffusers. You're going to point that little condensation hose such that the air is flowing over the window pane. Let me know when you're ready for the stowage location.
Ready.
Christina, the hose is in locker A1.
Copy.
Question, did you just want us to cool the window with the condensation hose, or did you want us to put the shroud back on and cool the window at the same time?
Victor, we definitely want you to cool down the window with the condensation hose. It's crew preference whether you put the shroud back on. The hose will allow you to do that if it helps with your lunar flyby.
Okay, copy. We're going to both at the same time. Thank you.
You can copy.
Houston, thank you for that suggestion. The cabin is dark and beginning, and that makes a big difference for the imagery. And for science, we are now seeing a half moon.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Thank you, Victor. We're happy to hear it. And we see half moon, full moon joy still.
In science, integrity, another observation, the window team commented on, and Christine and I discussed a bit, is in Hertzsprung, the solid and intact crater is very smooth. If it were a dirt road, it's very hard packed, and then you go outside of it, and that outer crater, that's the one that is older, it is a little rougher and more jagged, and starts to get into more loose-looking terrain. And the smooth interior also causes the craters that are inside of the larger crater, the smaller craters, to have really sharp edges, sharp distinct edges. And just a general comment on that area, Hertzsprung, that whole area, the average albedo there is darker. That is, I would say, three. And the average albedo around Oriental and between Oriental and Ulm, excluding the wedge, the darker wedge, is more on the 6-7, and that they also seem to be different texturally. Christina described it earlier around Hertzsprung, and then from Hertzsprung toward Ulm, toward Oriental, there appears to be a frozen, a rippling pond of frozen, or like choppy waves when it's windy out, choppy water, and then it freezes instantly. That's the texture. If you walk down there barefoot, it looks like it would be hard on your feet, like lava after it's cooled. It would be pokey. except for right there in the center of Hertzsprung, it looks paved, like a paved road, nice and smooth.
Victor, that's a wonderful description, going from a paved road to Aa Lava. Reminds us of the Icelandic Highlands. Thanks for that.
And science, another in the interior of the very intact, the interior of the intact crater at Hertzsprung is albedo variation. I think I heard one of the window crew maybe say color variation, but definitely albedo variation. There's lighter patches and slightly darker patches. It's not swirling, it's just patchy. It just has spots that are lighter, and I would say a predominantly darker average area.
Great descriptions, Victor. Thanks. Not swirly, just patchy is really helpful for us.
And science, the window team is hitting all the targets. They are on the plan and starting the discussion of the Terminator. Boy, I'm loving the Terminator. I think I know it's not clearly a moon feature, but what it does to the features of the moon, to the terrain, I've probably spent the most time describing into my recordings and thinking about and looking at the Terminator. There's just so much magic in the Terminator. The islands of light, the valleys, the what look like black holes. You'd fall straight to the center of the moon. If you stepped in some of those, it's just so visually captivating that the Terminator is the most striking thing that I've seen so far.
You've been loving your evocative descriptions, Victor. You really are bringing us along with you, and we're following along with visualizations that pale in comparison to your descriptions. Thanks. Integrity Science, one more question on a status of what the window team chose to observe for crew choice.
Window 2, talked about the Babylon, look for suspended dust, and the Terminator. And Window 3, about the experience and about the three-dimensionality of moon this close.
Wonderful.
And another observation about Oriental, I would say, is the features going off to the southwest, the two large, almost look like scratches in the surface. I don't know if they're rays or canyons or collapsed lava tubes, but two distinct features that are almost parallel going off southwest from Oriental Basin. They are the first thing that made me notice parallax of our trajectory looking out at Oriental. That and then the inner walls of the east side of the crater rings, you really get a sense that we're flying over something with elevation and terrain, and they look different from this orientation.
Love to hear it, Victor, and you had it that those chains are actually crater rays, secondary craters formed from the formation of Oriental.
Yeah, speaking of crater rays, the crater rays that are going off to the north, northwest, that run off toward Hertzsprung and I believe toward Babylon. I'm not looking out at it right now, but those crater rays are very interesting. They're all very small. I know you've imaged this, but they're all small, and they look like, you know, a big impact launching rocks and things that make smaller impacts down the way. But something very interesting, and again, you can see this in imagery, but some of them are parallel, and then some of them converge toward the center of Oriental. And then I think I even saw some that maybe diverge, which not diverge, but that are convergent, which indicate multiple large impacts that created a lot of secondary impact crater rays.
Fantastic, Victor. And I'll note that we can infer that you're looking down at your freshly named Integrity Crater, which is near the end of one of those beautiful crater rays from Oriental. Thanks for the description.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Integrity is easily identifiable with the naked eye from this point.
Integrity Houston, we are ready for our cabin and window teams to swap again. We have a 15-minute handover time here, and I have a couple of items I want to read up to you. They'll require you to write something down on your knee boards, so let me know when you're ready.
Okay, Houston, we are ready.
Copy Integrity. First of all, once you start this next shift here, during this lunar observation shift, we will begin our lunar LOS, so you can expect a call from me a few minutes prior reminding you. And second of all, Fido just sent us updated altitudes and METs for lunar closest approach and max Earth altitude. Let me know when you are ready to write those down. They differ slightly from Optimus.
Hey, Jenny, we are ready to copy.
Lunar closest approach will be at MET 5 days, 0 hours, 25 minutes, 34 seconds, and the altitude will be 4,007 statute miles. Maximum Earth altitude will be at MET 5 days, 0 hours, 27 minutes, 39 seconds with an altitude of 252,756 statute miles.
The crew really wants to ask for that in kilometers and in parsecs, but thank you for those. That is great. Thanks for that update.
I'll send Fido to work, and I appreciate the metric. Other than that, I have no new vehicle statuses to pass to you. Enjoy your handover time, and we're looking forward to picking back up with you shortly.
I will talk to you shortly.
Go ahead.
I don't know if Catherine and Devin are still there, but if they are, I just wanted to let them know how much fun we're having out here. It's extraordinary to be on the far side of the moon right now, just hanging out there and looking back at the Earth. And Ashley and Caitlin, and I know you're back in Canada, but if you happen to be watching too, just wanted to say hi to all you guys. Love you guys. And we'll be heading back your way shortly.
Thanks, Jeremy. I hear they are watching, and your family is still here. So thanks for passing that along.
Connected to CMN Network.
Integrity Houston, 10 minutes till the LOS. We'll take a snappy sit rep from the cabin if you have one.
Okay, Jenny, that came, we missed most of that, but just a 10-minute warning, is that what you said?
10-minute warning for the LOS, and I'll take a quick sit rep from the cabin, please.
All right. Cabin is still full of excitement. We've got Christina in window 2, Mike and Victor in window 3. Reed's actually been trying to get some images out of the docking tunnel. We can see from the moon and part of the moon out of the docking tunnel, which is pretty good. And I'm just grabbing some footage right now with our interior cameras.
Copy, Jeremy. We'd like to know what camera Reed is using and also the status of window 1. Looks like there might be a shroud removed.
Okay. Reed was using the Z9, and the T-shirt shroud is still on window 1, but we took the camera out of it.
so maybe that's what you're noticing. But when I looked in there, I saw a lot of sunlight reflecting around.
Copy. That makes a lot of sense to us, Jeremy. I want to remind you, coming up on this LOS, it will take sit reps in the blind. And as more and more of the moon is in darkness, we will take any report you have on impact flashing.
All right, Jenny, you have to say again your last. There's a lot of conversation here, and I was on the other side of the cabin, so I missed all of it.
Look out for impact flashes, and we'll take sit reps in the blind.
Okay, impact flashes, sit reps in the blind. We got it. And just so you understand what's going on with window one, there is light coming through the outer hall from window two into the inside of window one, if that makes sense. Like, I can see the inside of the vehicle when I look between the two panes of glass.
Copy. Integrity Houston, you are 6 minutes from your 40-minute lunar flyby LOS. From all of us, it's a privilege to witness you carrying the fire past our farthest reach. Thank you. Godspeed.
Thank you for that, Jenny. And thank you to all of you for allowing us the immense privilege to be on this journey together. It's quite amazing. And as we go on this journey, thinking about the NASA mission to explore the unknown in air and space, to innovate for the benefit of humanity, and to inspire the world through discovery. And as you've gone along on this journey with us, hopefully we're doing just those things. And as we get close to the nearest point to the moon and farthest point from Earth, as we continue to unlock the mysteries of the cosmos, I would like to remind you of one of the most important mysteries there on Earth, and that's love. Christ said in response to what was the greatest command, that it was to love God with all that you are. And he also, being a great teacher, said the second is equal to it. That is to love your neighbor as yourself. And so, as we prepare to go out of radio communication, we're still able to feel your love from Earth and to all of you down there on Earth and around Earth. We love you from the moon.
Houston copies. We'll see you on the other side.
We will see you on the other side.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Houston, Integrity, comp check.
Integrity, we have you loud and clear. Tell me.
Houston, we have you the same, and it is so great to hear from Earth again. To Asia, Africa, and Oceania, we are looking back say to you, we hear you can look up and see the moon right now. We see you too. When we burned this burn towards the moon, I said that we do not leave Earth, but we do it. And that is true. We will explore, we will build, ships, we will visit again. We will construct science outposts, we will drive rovers, we will do radio astronomy, we will found companies, we will bolster industry, we will inspire. But ultimately, we will always choose Earth, we will always choose each other.
Integrity from Earth, our single system, fragile and interconnected, we copy. Those of us that can are looking back.
Currently connected to CMN Network.
We are happy to say we copy.
Integrity, Houston, in Mission Control, all of your flight controllers and your flight director have flipped their Artemis II patches around. We are earthbound and ready to bring you home.
That's great. See the light of day as we head back to...
Integrity, Houston, for another comm check.
We have any line clear, Houston.
All right, Integrity, we hear you. That was a little clipped, but I think we have a better link now. We experienced some blockage from a solar array. We moved it, and we are in bias, tail to sun.
Okay, Houston, you're coming in loud and clear, and copy, we're in bias, tail to sun now.
Affirm, and Integrity, just so you know, we did not hear your response once we flipped our patches. Jeremy, we heard you call down, but you were clipped, and then we briefly lost comm. Clap her back.
Copy that. We were just excited that we got to share in that, that you, you the MER, and Mission Control flipped your patches around, and that that side of the patch is getting to see the light of day. Thanks for sharing that with us.
A pleasure. Integrity, Houston, for a tag up pre-forward link LOS in place of the flight director conference.
Okay, Jenny, we're ready.
All right, crew, I'm going to roll through a couple of topics here. The first two are for timeline. First of all, read for your toilet maintenance. It is a shortened toilet maintenance where you do not have to do the ozone changeout. That portion of the procedure is canceled. Victor, you have an HHP stop activity on your timeline. We need you to perform that as scheduled for bandwidth reasons. For your next portion of the flyby, in particular the eclipse, we want to remind you that you can take off the eclipse glasses when the sun sets and you are simply looking at the corona. And then finally, for the D5 with the long or zoom lens, which is set for solar corona, we want to remind you that when you are capturing Earth shine, you will likely have to adjust the exposure. That's all I have for you. Let me know if you have anything for us.
Okay, here's to copy all. Thanks for those words, Jimmy.
connected to CMN Network.
Integrity Houston, you have 3 minutes until we go into a forward link LOS. We will be back up with you in about an hour during the eclipse on Madrid.
Thanks for the heads up. Look forward to seeing you on the other side.
Likewise.
Integrity in the blind, high priority PAO activities on Reed's timeline are on PCD1 in a folder imagery for downlink, and then high priority standby imagery for downlink, and then lunar flyby for PAO, and then high priority PAO. Thank you.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Science Integrity in the blind. This is continues to be unreal. The sun has gone behind the moon. And the corona is still visible, and it's bright, and it creates a halo almost around the entire moon. But when you get to the Earth side, the Earth shine is already shown. I mean, almost seconds after the sun set behind the moon, you could see Earth shine. The Earth is so bright out there, and the moon is just hanging in front of us, this black orb out in front of us, in front of now, not the blackness, but the gray that blends and drifts into the blackness. We can see stars and the planets behind it. And Christina is in window one. Reed is in window two with the long lens. And Jeremy is describing it in window three. And it is quite an impressive sight. You can still see the horizon lit up brighter where the sun sets on that side of the moon. It is bright. And Earthshine is very distinct, and it creates quite an impressive visual illusion. Wow, it's amazing. Science Integrity, the window team is shifting around in the windows, and we are transferring settings on the camera to pick up Earthshine. And it is amazing. The brightness where the corona, where the sunset is still bright. I think there may still be corona visible, but that part of the horizon is still brighter. And you still have a distinct Earth shine.
Connected to CMN Network.
Science Integrity. Let's see, not a huge change in here, just an update. The camera settings for Earthshine are challenging. This one's challenging to capture. What we're seeing, we're just not picking up on the cameras. And after all of the amazing sights that we saw earlier, this is, we just went sci-fi. This has, it just looks unreal. You can see the surface of the moon. I mean, I guess the Earthshine, I guess Earthshine, you can actually see a majority of the moon. It is the strangest looking thing, but you can see so much on the surface. And Reed reports he's seen two meteors, science. Hi. Science and Tech Day in the Blind, the glow around the moon is beginning to become a little bit more even. It's not so much distinct just where the sun set on the moon's horizon. As we're flying through this trajectory, and then the sun's going to come up out of the other side. I think it's we're starting to see the glow around the moon get balanced out. I still see Earth shine, and the Earth is very bright out there. Still quite an unreal sight.
Integrity Houston, we have that sit rep loud and clear, and we are back with you. How do you hear me?
Hey, Jenny, we have you loud and clear. Thanks.
Copy. Victor, we're handing you over to Science for some critical questions. Thanks for your report. Integrity Science, we were loving your Science at Rest in the Blind, and it should come as no surprise that we have a number of follow-up questions. First, you mentioned Reed observing meteors. Can you speak to that? Were you referring to comets or impact flashes or something else?
Yeah, there was a little bit of giddiness. We have seen 3 impact flashes so far. I saw 2, and Jeremy has seen 1. Jeremy saw 2, so that's 4 total. Undoubtedly, quick impact flashes. It was not sun glint off of particulate from the thrusters or the purge tanks. It was definitely impact flashes on the moon. And Jeremy just saw another one. Go ahead with your next question.
Amazing news. I literally just looked over at the SIR and they were jumping up and down literally. If you could describe where on the moon you saw them, please.
So they've all been either on or a bit south of the equator and on the Earth side of the moon. Stand by. All right, so Jeremy has seen them kind of on and south of the equator, kind of spread across the moon, and mine were both south of the equator and just a little bit left of center of the moon.
Incredible news, Reed, and reminder, we have citizen scientists here on Earth looking for impact flashes, so hearing you saw them on the near side means that people saw them too.
Are you still with us, Houston, or do we lose you?
Integrity, I hear you loud and clear. How do you hear me?
Okay, we got you loud and clear. One of the other things I wanted to describe, which was surprising to me, but the entire moon is lit up. It's glowing behind the entire moon. I thought it would look, dark against the black sky or deep space, but the sun is lighting up the entire limb of the moon. You can see the entire perimeter of it, and even now with the sun far behind the moon, you can see, you still make a little bits of topography around the entire limb, just bumps as you go around it. And there's about the glow around the moon, once your eyes adjust, is easily 10 widths or diameters of the sun. Around the entire moon.
Incredible to hear, Jeremy. Were you able to actually pick out any discrete features on the lunar surface? And if so, how do they look different than when you observe them in solar illumination?
No, we really haven't been able to identify features on the lunar surface yet. We just see, the topography on the limb. For the Earth glow, we're about a quarter moon, waxing quarter moon, if you will, from an Earth glow perspective, and it's just at a very, just a sight angle. I'm just not able to tell what I'm looking at yet in the Earth glow.
Understood. Thanks, Jeremy. One other question for you on the solar corona. Were you actually able to see any structure or color in the corona before most of it disappeared behind the moon?
I didn't pick out any color, but definitely structure. I mean, there were streamers, and they were not uniform at all. For me, the 5 o'clock position, there was just this constant streamer. It would change in intensity and diameter, but it was always there, and it was always at the 5 o'clock position. I only saw one plume, and it came out of basically the 3 o'clock position of the sun. That was very short-lived when I could see the plume.
Exactly what we were looking for. Thanks, Jeremy, and a heads up that we, you know, calculated here on the ground about how long you could see the corona for, and we expect it to start to appear again in the next 11 minutes. Thanks for those amazing descriptions.
Okay, we're excited to see it all again.
Integrity Houston, we're following along as well. That was outstanding. If you haven't already, just reminding you to swap positions at the window. And that brief LOS we had previously was due to a beta rate change expected.
Okay, we copy that, Jenny.
Integrity Science, one more request for you. While it's still fresh in your mind, any annotations or sketches you want to make of what you're seeing either around the corona structures you just mentioned or even on Earthshine would be so appreciated.
Okay, Kelsey. It's going to be pretty hard to go look at a TCD right now, but we'll definitely try and annotate what we saw.
And if the annotations come in the next block where you're cleaning up your documentation, that sounds like a good plan to me.
Science, we're getting set up for sunrise. The window teams are, Christina is supporting, so Z9 and window 1. Jeremy's got the long lens in window 2 and the short lens in window 2. And Reed is in window 3, and he has started recordings and is set up to see corona.
Great, sit rep, Victor. That sounds like a good config, and we're showing coronal effects start to appear on your video camera. So in the next few minutes, we should start to hear your observations.
Science and Houston Integrity, I know this observation won't be of any scientific value, but I'm really glad we launched on April 1st, because humans probably have not evolved to see what we're seeing. It is truly hard to describe. It is amazing.
Amazing. Thank you, Victor.
And just one more logistics note, we have gone as dark as we can in the cabin. We have turned the DUs all the way as dim as they can go, so there's no, you can't see anything on the screens. Every bit of light in the cabin affects the view. You're definitely seeing the brightness go closer. It's definitely brighter on the Earthshine side, and so we are expecting to see some corona here soon.
We copy all. Excited for what you see next.
You're connected to CMN Network.
I'm not sure if we talked much about the star field, but we've got lots of stars. You've got the nice glow around the moon, but, you know, right off the, well, we're upside down now, but from upside down 4 o'clock, right off the edge of the moon, looks like a planet, that line of planets, there's something, a moon diameter to the left and something right off the limb of the moon to the right, and then something orange. It looks orange to the right of that, about half the moon diameter. So, but anyway, there are definitely stars. I think some of those planets that you said we might see, we're seeing. And so in Unreal View, yeah, the moon in the foreground is one of the darkest things we see out the window, and now it's deep space behind it is kind of dark blue like it looks from Earth, but you can also still see stars. It's a quite a wicked view.
Victor's trying.
Victor's doing the best job, and I'm not going to try to add on to what he's doing. It's just, it's indescribable. It, no matter how long we look at this, our brains are not processing this image in front of us. It is absolutely spectacular, surreal. There's no adjectives. I'm going to need to invent some new ones to describe what we are looking at out this window.
This is just absolutely beautiful and inspiring to hear. And Victor, we suspect what you're seeing is Saturn and Mars. That reddish object is likely Mars. Good opportunity to look to the future of where we're going.
Yeah, we can absolutely see the color of Mars. That's awesome. Okay. And from this vantage point, the 4 o'clock on the Earthshine side is definitely getting brighter, still no coronal structure.
Houston copies.
And we aren't able to distinguish which Mars, but we can clearly see Mars in the Earthshine.
We copy.
We have not seen an impact flash in the last 5 minutes.
Sounds unlucky, but you had a pretty strong start, so we'll take it.
And actually, right after I said that, right at the south pole, near the south pole on the Terminator, Reed just saw one.
Amazing. Integrity Science, and as you look around our solar system neighborhood, you should see Saturn setting behind the moon right now.
We do. We've been watching it track close to the horizon, and it's right tangential to the moon at this moment. Okay, the light is continuing to grow in intensity. At about the 4 o'clock position on the, about the 8 o'clock position on the Earthshine side, Saturn has set. Mars is tracking towards the moon's horizon.
Integrity Science, we copy, and we're starting to see it on the vehicle stream. Looking forward to any coronal observations you can share with us.
And Science, Integrity, still no coronal structure at this time, just continue to grow in intensity.
Copy, Victor, and reminder, you still should have several minutes before the eclipse classes need to go on, and we can send you up a reminder when you're getting close to take your eyes away from the D5 viewfinder, but you should be good for several more minutes.
Copy, thank you, and yes, please send up the reminder, thank you. Okay, we all think we're starting to see something. I believe the most popular term is baby hair. As the light grows in intensity and the horizon on this side becomes very distinct, you can still see Earthshine, even though the sun's brightness is definitely growing in intensity.
Love the description, Victor. I'm sure as the next couple minutes progress, more of those structures will continue to pop out.
Okay, we are definitely starting to see structure. That baby hair is rapidly growing out toward the 9 o'clock and the 8 o'clock. It's almost as if it were reaching out for Venus or for the Earth. If you've ever seen the spotlight off the top of the Luxor at night in Las Vegas, this looks like what that wants to be when it grows up.
Integrity Science, glad to hear you're following your training of Tell it like you see it.
So far, it's pretty symmetrical. There are two or three streamers that are growing in intensity and in magnitude, and it's slowly starting to widen, spread out across the horizon. Pretty amazing view.
And Integrity Houston, great words. Reminder for you, we are approaching the brightness level at which you should no longer be using the viewfinder on the D5.
Integrity copies, and thanks for the heads up. Oh, and I think we're seeing some directionality. Some of it is going in different directions because it appears to be moving and combining and recombining as it moves. It's pointing in different directions, and some of it appears to be going like down toward the south pole of the moon, but it's and then coming back together and going out towards Venus and the Earth. And depending on how I stare at it, it looks like one large structure, but then it definitely has wisps, and you can see three or four structures inside it. It's like watching a flame. It's like looking at a flame, and stand by. And so it has some apparent movement. Now there's a very bright spot. There's a very bright spot in the center of it. There's a towering light of... There's a towering light, and then there were like two streamers that were going 30 degrees out from it, and now it is just extremely bright.
Houston, copy all.
It's getting a little warm.
And we copied all. We wanted to remind you at this point on the eclipse glasses. Should be about time for those.
Houston, we copy all. We are in eclipse glasses. That was an absolutely spectacular, magnificent experience.
Thanks for the report. We sure wish we were there with you.
And Houston, if you could give me about 20 new superlatives in the mission summary for tomorrow, that'll help my vocabulary out a bit. Thank you.
We will solicit input from the team. Integrity Houston, back with you after a data rate change. Regarding the SAW-3 camera T low caution, no action for you. It just got a little cool during the eclipse.
Okay, we copy, and if you didn't copy my request for the mission summary to add about 20 new superlatives to help my vocabulary, I would appreciate it.
We copied it fantastically. In Integrity Science, this is basically wrapping up your fly-by-day observations. I can't say enough how much science we've already learned and how much inspiration you've provided to our entire team, the lunar science community, and the entire world with what you were able to bring today. You really brought the moon closer for us today, and we cannot say thank you enough. And Science signing off, and can't wait to talk to you tomorrow morning.
Entire team, Kelsey, to the entire NASA science team, you all really turned to when we shifted launch dates to April 1st, and you got the most incredible package together for us to go do some great science and some great, truly human experience moments here. And we were well prepared, and we appreciate all of you. And this is what we do best when we all come together and work as a team. So you all knocked it out of the park. Thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Beautiful words, Reed. Thanks so much. Integrity Houston, understand that you are still reflecting upon and consolidating your lunar observations. At your convenience, I have two items related to the upcoming VIP event.
currently connected to CMN Network.
Go ahead.
All right, first we wanted to let you know that the message for that upcoming event is on board for review at your convenience. That's message 3.06.04. Second item is that we've seen a couple of video blips in previous events. So during the HDTAO setup activity, we're wondering if Jeremy could please confirm for us that the TS rate is set to 1300 when you get to step 10.
Okay, Jenny. Yeah, we're pretty sure we've been in 1300 for all the PAO events. We've been tracking that when we swap between the HHP and the D5.
We copy, Jeremy. Thanks. And for the record, the phenomenal Jenny has gone on to her next appointment of the day, and you've now got Tess with you.
Hi, I'm sorry, Tess. Great to have you on board. Thank you.
No worries. Happy to be here. And Integrity, 3-minute warning for the maneuver back to bias tail to sun.
Houston Integrity, we're curious if you're ready for us to start the stream a bit early to test the scene voice.
Checking. And Integrity, affirm, we are go to start the stream.
Okay, Houston, the stream has started. We checked the TS rates 1300 and audio is true. So I will give you a voice check now on the mic.
We copy good settings and we've got a good view.
I sent an audio check down on the handheld mic. Did you get it?
Sorry for the delay, Jeremy. We were talking that a bit, but it was a bit broken, so please repeat for us. Integrity Houston, we like the scene. At your convenience, we'll take a 10 count with Jeremy in frame.
Okay, copy that. Give us 2 minutes, and one minute, and we'll do that.
Copy. Great voice check, and good words. We like the scene. And Integrity Houston, we are seeing a black cable going right through the middle of the scene. At your convenience, if you would please move that, TAO would appreciate it.
Houston Integrity, high priority TAO images from the Eclipse are on PCD1 in a so-named folder.
We copy, Christina, thanks.
Connected to CMN Network.
Houston Integrity for ARS.
Go ahead, Integrity.
Hey, Jess, great to talk to you. Any chance we could drop the fan speed down for this PAO event?
We will put that in work. Great to be talking to you, too. And Integrity Houston, overall, we are quite happy with the framing. We just see a drink bag that is right behind Victor's left elbow that we want to make sure doesn't float free during the event. Integrity Houston, we are putting the fan speed change in work. And as part of that, we are going to inhibit cabin leak detection. The EdgeT manual response is still available.
Copy, thumbs up. Integrity Houston, we are 3 minutes out from an on-time start, and we have adjusted the fan speed. We'll take a thumbs up if you're happy with it. Copy, thumbs up. Superlative thumbs up. Integrity Houston, no action for the DU-1. Caution, we're taking a look. Integrity, this is Houston. Are you ready for the event?
Hello, Houston. Integrity is ready for the event.
Administrator Isaacman, this is Mission Control Houston. Please call Integrity for a voice check.
Administrator Isaacman, we've got you loud and clear, sir. Hello. Us. President, this call is certainly special to all of us, and we really have a lot of faith in our administrator, Jared Isaacman, who is with you. We appreciate his leadership in NASA and in the international community. We are doing great things, and we are proud to be a part of it. I have to tell you, as we came around the near side of the moon, seeing all the sights that we've seen from Earth for all of our lives, but we're seeing them from a different perspective, and then we started to get a glimpse of the We saw sites, Oriental sites that no human has ever seen before, not even in Apollo, and that was amazing for us. And then the surprise of the day, we just came out of an eclipse where the sun, moon, and the entire dark moon, about that big, right out the window that we were watching, we could see the corona of the sun, and then we could see the planet train line up and Mars, and all of us commented how excited we are to watch this nation and this planet become a two-planet species.
Mr. President, be here with you speaking about our incredible day today. I think one of the biggest highlights was coming back from the far side of the moon and having the first glimpses of planet Earth again after being out of communication for about 45 minutes. It really just reminds you what a special place we have and how important it is for our nation to lead and not follow in exploring deep space.
Yes, Mr. President, it was I said a little prayer, but then I had to keep rolling. I was actually recording scientific observations of the far side of the moon. You know, that is actually the time when we were the farthest and the closest to the moon, and so we were really able to make some of our most detailed observations of the far side of the moon up close. And so we were busy up here working really hard, and I must say it was actually quite nice.
Well, Mr. President, we certainly did, and our science really set us up well to understand what they thought we might see. And the gravitational pull of the Earth has had a profound effect on the near side of the moon, changing all those dark mares, those dark patches of the moon you see from Earth. It's very different on the far side. While you see some small patches of those Mare in deep craters, it's very much absent on that side, so that's really neat. And while I have the microphone, sir, I just want to thank you on behalf of Canada. The space leadership you spoke of from America truly is extraordinary. I've said this many times before, a nation that leads like that and creates and sets big goals for humanity that brings other countries along with it is truly incredible, and I know that's a very intentional, not a necessary decision, intentional decision to lead by example and to allow other countries like Canada to share our gifts and help you achieve these mutually beneficial goals, like establishing a presence on the moon and eventually going to Mars. And Canadians are so proud to be a part of this program.
You're connected to CMN Network.
Administrator Isaacman, just get a quick comm check. Make sure you guys are still on the line and we didn't have a handover. Yes, Mr. President, we heard that, and we do love our Jeremy Hansen. We love all our Canadian astronauts, Jenny Gibbons, Josh Kutrick. They're just great people, and they're such a welcome addition to our Corps.
Thank you for that, Mr. President, and when you want us, we will be there. And thank you for your leadership. Thank you to Jared for his leadership. Really, thank you for taking the time out today to visit NASA. It's really special for us, but it's really special for the team on the ground. A whole team of people all around the world pulled this off, and we just want to say thank you to all of you for this. It is the thrill and honor of a lifetime to have been on this journey. Today was amazing, but this 2-year journey has been amazing, and it was made possible by the American people and the Canadian people, and we're so grateful to you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you to all participants. Integrity, we are now resuming operational audio communications. Integrity Houston, great job on the event. Just a heads up, we are on track to start the next event on time at 4:15.
Okay, sounds great. We'll be ready.
Integrity Houston with a question about sand speed.
Go ahead.
Reed, we were wondering if this adjusted fan speed is something that you would like to keep going forward, or if it was just a specific change request for the events this evening.
Certainly for PAO events, this is an ideal fan speed. If you're willing to give us this fan speed for a routine habitability, I think we would take it and try it for a while.
And, Reed, we are able to support keeping the fan speed in this config. Happy to keep it here to collect data.
Okay, you got 4 happy astronauts up here. We'll take it. Obviously, when we go to exercise, we'll need to bump it up, but I think for quiet of living, this will be great.
We copy, and we love seeing those smiles.
Ahead. Just want to make sure we have the config you're expecting. I have the dual camera bracket is installed, the window shape is closed, and the docking camera is stowed in its Alpha 3 storage area.
That's a good config.
Thank you.
And while I've got you, we are 3 minutes out from an on-time start of the next event. Integrity, this is Houston. Are you ready for the event?
Houston, Integrity is ready for the event.
Administrator Isaacman, this is Mission Control Houston. Please call Integrity for a voice check.
Administrator Isaacman, we've got you loud and clear up here. Administrator, great to chat with you. Just something that just shocked me because I'm really using imagery and just the three-dimensionality of it. You know from your experience of seeing the Earth from space how it just seems different, and you look out and depth of things, and when we were on the far side of the moon looking back at Earth, it was just so obvious you had this sphere out in front of you of the moon and this three-dimensional. You really felt like you weren't in a capsule. You'd been transported to the far side of the moon, and it really just bent your mind. It was an extraordinary human experience. I'm so grateful for it.
You know, we had an amazing launch. The SLS is quite a powerful rocket and got us into a 1,200 by, eventually a 100-mile orbit, and clearly power and speed, and then we did our translunar injection, and we were going quite fast. And so with all of that speed, though, it still took us days to get here. And so the scope of all of the things to a 321-foot-tall rocket was amazing. It just puts the, you know, the power required to do this in perspective. But then even with all that power and to get to those velocities, it still took us days and the breadth of the distance we had to cover. Watching the distance from Earth count up and the distance from the moon count down was one of the most surprising things I've enjoyed.
Well, as I was trying to formulate an answer, at first I couldn't say anything because there are so many things to choose from. I'll try to just narrow it down, but I'm going to go with something we did yesterday, a manual flight test objective, where we just basically got to sit at the vehicle. It was Jeremy and I this time, and just drive around using the rotational hand controller, basically just drive it with a stick, and how well it handled, how tight the control algorithms were, and watching it respond when we actually degraded it on purpose by going into 3 degrees of freedom control, by actually inhibiting some of the jets, which even though we have jet redundancy, of course, each other in these complicated algorithms. So it was just amazing to be in a deep space spacecraft and just be flying it around by hand. The one other thing I'll say, how fast it has gone by. I'm not ready to go home. I can't believe that something this cramped of quarters can fly by and still be done every single minute.
And I'll just close out with, I think just scale, Jared, is the thing that is just blowing my mind. You know, you flew Polaris Dawn to some amazing apogee numbers, and on the International Space Station we're 250 nautical miles up, and that's the most beautiful view I think a human could ever experience. And we are dealing with numbers that are 250,000 miles, and every time Mission Control points to this vehicle, either at the moon or at Earth, and it reminds me every day that humans have to go, we've got to explore, we've got to go further to expand our knowledge, expand our horizons. And every time we take another step forward, it makes the world seem a little bit smaller and a little bit more manageable. And just putting these numbers in perspective, it is impossible as a human to look at these displays and comprehend them. But here we are. And NASA is doing this. And the international team is doing this, and they're doing it very well. I think as you get older, your answer to that question changes a lot. Certainly when I was a young boy and a young man just seeing an airplane flying overhead, to me that really lit a fire in me. And then I think when you reach your middle age, it is interesting to watch leadership throughout the world kind of change the course of human. You can watch that unfold. And now that I'm just a little bit over 50, you'll be there soon. Now that I'm just a little bit over 50, I mean, it all ties back to just family, and you understand just how much you, the people that you surround yourself with, and that is really every night when you go to bed, that's really what you end up thinking. At least that's what I end up thinking.
That's a great question, Jared. We've actually been thinking about the Artemis III crew since we were assigned as the Artemis II crew. It was the beginning of how we came up with how we wanted to fly this mission, how we wanted to buy down risk for the program, and values as a crew. And so, you know, over the course of these 3 years, we've taken a lot of notes. So we've almost got a book to hand them. But I think a few practical things, you know, just sitting here, we've been living for the past 6 days. How you pack is a huge impact to how you will live on the journey. And so things like food and your hygiene products, and then, you know, yeah, you know what's going on with our waste management system, the technology that we have, practicing that and being familiar with that and being prepared mentally. I use it on the space station. I use it at home in training. But I'll be honest, I wasn't really prepared to have to use it for over half the mission. But, you know, we adapt and overcome, and so I can't wait to talk to that crew.
I'll be honest with you, the main word, because superlatives just don't do it justice, is humility. We would never be here if it weren't for so many people that came before us, starting with Neil Armstrong, Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, civil rights movement leaders, everyone who worked on this spacecraft. Before we got here in our 3 years of training, we went all over the country and even to our European and Canadian partners to see the people who have put their hands on this hardware, the millions of parts from every valve, to this entire thing, the people that put on harnesses every day to rig it up in the VAB. They all passed the record. We definitely didn't pass the record up here alone.
Connected to CMN Network.
Yeah, as Victor said earlier, when we were on the far side of the moon and out of contact with planet Earth, we all knew it, and it was a milestone. We saw Earth disappear, Earth set. But we were so busy with the science, and we have such faith in our vehicle integrity, such faith in mission control, that we were just at complete peace and just doing our job. And just trying to do a good job to collect as much science data as we could while we were on the far side of the moon, and we were just giddy in here, like, of our lives.
He's being a bit humble, but as soon as we went out of comm with planet Earth, we did have maple cookies. As we just gathered together for about 30 seconds, each one of us had a maple cream cookie, and then right back into the science. But we had to take a moment to honor that time going behind Earth. And it was going behind the moon and out of touch with Earth, and that was a very surreal moment for this crew.
There's so many directions I think we could go with that. And I just, you know, I think that there's, you know, global, but I think real impact is local. And I to see the Earth as an entire thing and look at it, this system, and to see it all in once. But my daughters, and just the, you know, the things that we can impact directly, the people that I can touch, that I can speak to, hug, and show love and gratitude toward, is the thing that I think is going to change and last. And with you also talked about the future that we're going to have in the stars, and you know, this mission, I think we swung for the fence and launched on our first try. After learning a lot earlier this year, but I think it set the stage for us to go out and continue to swing for the fence hard in our Orion SLS and ground systems programs to go and get the next one teed up so that that crew can knock it off out of the park. And so I have huge expectations for what's coming next.
I will tell you, last of my eyes, I did start thinking about getting home. It's not homesickness at all, but it's the first time probably in 3 years I let my mind get past the moon and back towards home, and I had to catch myself right there. You're an operator just like we are, and you know that is a place to be when you're up here. We got to look one step ahead. What's next? The next burn? How are we setting up our trajectory to get home? And we are going to do that. We are locked in, and we are definitely excited for the second half of this mission, and we are on guard. We are first crew to fly this vehicle. We are ready for any contingency in any scenario, and we are going to stay locked in every second until we are back on that Navy ship and then home reunited with our families.
Well, we all love getting our hands on cameras and our eyes behind the lens here, because we're just trying to share the incredible things that we're seeing, and that's obviously the best way we can try to do that. I've been into night sky photography for a long time, and so it's a dream come true for me. I have thought specifically to that community. The time lapses I've been trying to get, those are a little tougher because we have a very dynamic vehicle. It's not like being on ISS where you can get the city lights below and the auroras and the spinning stars around the North Star. There's a lot going on. So, but what we got to matter is out of this world. When we viewed that eclipse, that was the one time we all said, we literally cannot capture this with a camera. Everything else, I think we've been able to really put our hearts and minds into making sure we understand so that we can bring that home to everyone. But having to set the low light features for Earthshine on the moon while it's an eclipse, that was a new one. I had to dig deep in my book for that one.
thanks for the iPhones. They've been working great. Thank you so much, Administrator. We are just proud to be a part of this team, doing our work every day, and we are supported by a huge world of humans, and we are just honored to be a part of that. Thank you.
Thank you to all participants. Integrity, we are now resuming operational audio comm. Integrity, Houston, with two updates.
Houston, go ahead for with the updates.
Hey, Victor, again, awesome job on both of those events. The team down here really enjoyed following along. I've got two sync items for you. The first is that based on ground schedules, we'd like to pull your flight director conference up before your PMC, so we'll start the flight director conference at the time the PMC is currently scheduled. And the second item is just following up on the DU-1 caution. We believe this is a recurrence of what we saw with DU-2 earlier in the mission. It's back up, and it's ready for you to reconfigure displays as you wish, and I see you have that in work.
Okay, great. We would love a main and secondary dump line status, really the main line.
Check in. Read back with you on the dump lines. The main dump is open and it's proceeding very slowly, but the secondary is still configured and go for use.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. Houston Integrity, we have a science question.
We are ready to copy.
You're connected to CMM Network.
Before we go to bed, because we think we made some changes, but the procedures were not updated as expected. We no longer have to transfer any of the audio recordings on our PCDs or any notes we made in OneNote. That you will just go into the applicable locations and pull that stuff down from where they are originally created.
That is a good recollection, Jeremy. That is correct.
Okay, so we are transferring photos into four science folders on all three PCDs. And if you go into those four science folders, you'll get all of the imagery that we took today. And just a heads up, we did so much excitement up here. Sometimes we switch cards and sometimes we didn't. And so the different shifts are on various cards in various places, but all the photos are there.
Copy all. Thanks for the report. Integrity Houston OE2 is configured for your conference with Mr. Radigan.
Currently connected to CMN Network.